Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members.
Morning, Advocate.
Good morning.
We see the corporate before we see you.
Thanks. Glad to be here, Honorable Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yes, we are going to give you 30 minutes to present.
Okay.
We have gone through your presentation.
Okay. All right.
Because we still have to deal with also the information regulation.
I see. No worries.
We'll divide time amongst
the
two.
Yes. No, thank you, Chair. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, we have 3 minutes before we start. And good morning to everybody on the platform and those who are watching at home. We are left with 3 minutes. Try and make sure that within that 3 minutes, so you finish your tea and everything so that we can start. Honorable Breitenbach, is there anything wrong with Honorable Horn?
No, Mr. Chair, he's fine, thank you. He just has other commitments early this morning. He'll probably join us a little later.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
He didn't oversleep, unlike the Honorable Janki.
How do you know that Honorable Janki has overslept?
It's for me to know and you to find out. Because we both can catch on, remember.
no further comment. so that we can be able to allocate it properly amongst the two entities that are going to be presenting today. Welcome, SIU, led by Advocate and we are now, today we'll be dealing with your APPs and your budget. Over to you, Advocate Mtebe.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, thank you very much for affording us at SIU the opportunity to come and present our annual performance plan and the budget that goes with the annual performance plan. I'm joined by my colleagues, Honorable Chair, just in the interest of time, as they come in to present their part, they can introduce themselves, but it's members of the Executive Committee at SIU. I'm going to ask my colleague, Ms. Nombulelo, to Mpotulo, to share the presentation, Chair. Ms. Nombulelo, if you can share the presentation and project it, please. All right, thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, we've noted that we've got 30 minutes to Chair, this comments on the strategic plan that we had as senior management at SIU. It's also found Chair and the Honorable Members on the year that's coming, which is 2021-2022 annual performance plan. Next slide, please. This is really just an overview, Honorable Chair. will present the mandate, which the committee is well aware of, the strategic overview, environmental scan, which we'll not go into detail on, outcomes and outcome indicators, SIU outcomes and strategic focus areas, outputs, then the measuring our performance and the budget overview, and then the risks that we have assessed related to our strategy and the APP. Next slide, please. Chair will not really go through this. The other members can see this as part of the minister's statement on page 5 of the APP. Really just indicates that as we march towards implementing our 5-year strategy based on which this APP is also crafted, entering to 21-22, which is the second year towards the medium-term strategic framework period, the fight against corruption must be intensified. And we're really presenting in the context of that. This slide is the mandate, Chair. I will not go into detail. We take into account the constitutional mandate. We just, as we always cite, a few of the sections, access to information, just administrative action. We also relate to the access to the court. And another important section, honorable members, which is section 95 of the Constitution, which really provides for principles of public good public administration. We take that into account as we test the administration, as we investigate. Of APP that outlines detail. We also mentioned just some of the acts that we look to in terms of ensuring that we reach the appropriate legislative and legal outcomes. Criminal Procedure Act, we take that into account. In the main, as we investigate prevention of corrupt activities. Next slide. All the state institutions that we investigate in would like to see, and that impact will indicate it as we go along. But in the main, we would like to show that ultimately, together with other law enforcement agencies, we reach society of fraud and corruption from the state institutions. Our vision stays the same. We have not changed it after the strategic session. We would like to still remain the state preferred and trusted anti-corruption forensic investigating and litigating agency. As our mission, we provide forensic investigation and civil litigation services to combat corruption, serious malpractice and maladministration to protect the interests of the state and the public. Our motto remains the same after the strategy, but Chair, I think at the next occasion, we would like to just indicate to the committee that when the senior management of SIU met, we were of the view that given the impact that SIU is beginning to make or is making, this motto would probably in the next occasion be reading fighting against corruption. We've been poised for a while as we put together the systems and ensure that we begin to strike. And I think it's an appropriate time, having seen the impact, that the senior management is of the view that this needs to be revised. We deliver on the SIU work based on three programs, which is program number 1, program 2, program 3. One being mainly the enablement functions, which is the support services. Program 2 and program 3 are really part of the core function. Program 3 being one of those programs that really supports the outcomes and ensuring that our remedial actions are implemented by the state institutions and also supporting the state institutions in terms of ensuring that we prevent corruption and maladministration going forward. Next slide. We do that, Chair, as we execute our strategy based on these values. On the top left, integrity, we place integrity at the center of what we do. And this is clearly understood across the organization and all of those other values, teamwork, collaboration, independence, professionalization, drive, and passion. Next slide. Honorable Chair, on page 19 of the APP itself, all of these are outlined, but we do take into account the National Development Plan and the medium-term strategic framework as we prepared the APP. Next slide, please. Chair, I will not go into detail on this, but on page number 28, of the APP itself, we do outline the operating model of the SIU, but this is just the framework. This framework informs the SIU operating and delivery model. You'll see we go now, Chair, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, into the environmental sphere. Next slide, please. Next slide. We looked into both the external and environmental scheme. Honourable Chair, I'll not spend time in detailing what we have assessed in the environment, but as we indicate there, that we internalize shape our plans and adopt a collective view and agility towards the organizational impact, taking into account all of these environmental factors and as they change along the line. We would like to relentlessly pursue the unabated fight against the scourge of corruption and, dare I say, hold all those who are responsible to account. Next slide, Chair. I'll not go again in detail. We've already presented this to the honourable members and the committee. We considered the strategic execution journey as we went along since we adopted the new strategy. So we thought we could just briefly indicate where we have really come from as we executed our strategy. Firstly, as we adopted the new strategy, we had indicated that it is our projection that SIU will experience an increase in demand for forensic services. We have seen that. There's been quite an increase in the proclamations. So, Chair, Honourable Chair and members, we said that the turnaround time at the time, and I'm talking more or less about 5 years ago, that the turnaround times of SIU investigations needed to be improved and they were not on par with global benchmarks. We have sought to improve on that. As we speak now, there is an improvement with a recent example being the COVID-19 investigations, which we have turned them around quite quickly and we give a 6-weekly report to the president. We would like, as we say in that column there, that we would like to revise, because the standard at the moment is that any investigation that goes over a year, we need to produce an interim presidential report, but we want to keep the COVID-19 standards and bring it down to probably 3 months. Every 3 months, we need to ensure that we produce the report, show the outcomes, show the impact, and show the consequence management. As we continue, Chair, we continue to set realistic targets. And we had said at the time that the organization has suffered corporate memory loss we have sought to ensure that we stabilize and ensure that we improve on that. We have achieved stability through EXCO and provincial heads appointments. We have also appointed heads of investigations, principal and chief forensic investigators, forensic lawyers, civil litigation lawyers. We have concluded all of this. The recruitment process for other critical positions is underway, notably forensic accountants that we need to ensure that we appoint because we have seen a need, a dire need for that in supporting the investigators. Next slide. Next slide, please. Ms. Nombulelo, please flip to the next slide, please, to save time. Right, thank you. Honorable Chair, again, we have also progressed the implementation of our vision and mission. As I indicated, the progress in the recruitment, and that was also to address, because at the time, we had found and detected that the morale of the staff was a bit low five or so years ago in terms of, the staff feeling that there has been long wanting to progress, career progression, but we have since turned that around. We have done all of this recruitment process up to now. We have found quite capable members of SIU who could be recruited into these new positions. We are happy ready that we have done that. And going forward, we would like to ensure that we focus on the corruption prevention activities and implement data analytics. Next slide. This next slide, Chair, as we do our work in the external environment, we continue to look at how South Africa is rated generally. We note how South Africa is rated and what we need to do to contribute to the score improvement. In page 25 of the APP, honorable members, this is outlined quite in detail. As you can see there, we really need to ensure that we bring up, the score. South Africa is number 9. You know, top of this scale is Seychelles, but there are factors that we have looked and what is it that needs to be done together in the ACTT and other colleagues in the law enforcement and environment so that we can improve generally. The next slide also deals with the external environment in terms of the data that shows corruption reports involving national government. That counts for about 29%, which is a 2% increase in comparison to 2018. So, Chair, we really look at all of these comparisons, and this tells us a story and indicates areas in which we need to improve. As I indicated, this would be on page 25, paragraph 312, in terms of the corruption that we have observed that needs to be tackled. The next slide. Next slide, Chair, again, without going into detail, is still the analysis of the corruption trend. I'll go through that. Next slide, please. Again, Chair, this is, in fact, the next slide. These are all the analysis of the corruption trend. If you go to the next slide. Yes, the analysis is going okay. If we pause here, this is really just some of those factors that we have looked at, the sixth administration has also prioritized the fight against corruption. We've looked at the outcomes of the various commissions, notably the Commission on State Capture. We continue to interact with the Commission in various of our investigations, and we do incorporate some of the evidence that comes out of there, notably in Transnet, Eskom, and in Genel. We've done that, and we will ensure that we produce the results supported by that evidence. Next slide. Next slide. Again, this is just really a continuation of the analysis of the political factors. Having looked at the arise in the corruption, the second bullet point really just says the ability of SIU to act speedily. Speedily is really what we would like to ensure in each investigation to improve its investigations and turnaround times, demonstrating to the citizenry government's commitment to fighting corruption. Chair, in this regard, we've done some work, and at an appropriate time, we will come to the committee. We're finalizing the SIU Amendment Act amendment. We'll take it through the Justice Department. I think by the end of this month, we should be done and submitted, and they'll put it through the legislative program that takes into account areas of improvement. Next slide, please. The next slide, Chair, deals with the economic factors, which I will really not go into detail on. Generally, we have seen that the global and the South African outlook is not as positive. There has been financial and economic contraction that also contributes to the environment. The margins are squeezed. We have seen that the fiscal also is also constrained, and we need to ensure that we pull our efforts in ensuring that we pluck up the bleeding of the finance of the government coffers, and that we do by ensuring that we investigate effectively and stop the unlawful or maladministration, stop the corruption, and recover the monies that are due to the government. Next slide. This is the continuation of the economic factors, which I will really not go through, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. You can go to the next slide. I think the social factors are also quite evident in terms of where the global environment and our environment are. We do take that into account as we do our work. The next slide. Honorable Chair, the next slide, also just in brief, it says, having considered all of these factors, we need to position SIU appropriately. As I indicated earlier on, our mandate is to ensure that we investigate the allegations effectively, we ensure that the evidence is gathered, evidence that supports the outcomes, we bring out those outcomes without fear, favor, and prejudice. We ensure that the remedial actions are acted upon, and we ensure that there's consequence management of importance, the recovery of the monies that have been lost by state institutions. We move over to the next slide, which really deals with the internal environment. If you go to the next slide, please. The next slide, Honorable Chair, we also look into our human capital, which is really the important asset. And as I indicated, that we are busy now ensuring that all the recruitment happens, we create the appropriate capacity and resources and the skills that we require. On page 32 of the APP itself, you'll see, Chair, that our structure remains unchanged after the strategic session. However, we are speeding up to ensure that we populate and fill all those positions to ensure that there's just complete stability and resources are there to execute our function. A related aspect is the information and communication technology. We are aware that we need to enable, especially with the COVID-19 experience, where we've really realized that interaction with stakeholders, witnesses, and even just processing documents requires ICT enablement. We will improve on that one. Next slide. The next slide, Chair, is something that the committee has heard before, the improvement of our funding model. As we speak now, that process is progressing. Our CFO is quite engaged with the officials at the National Treasury. We will continue to update the committee. Needless to say, in the amendments of the legislation, we've also built in some of the recommended changes. The next slide is a continuation of our views around the funding model. I will not go through that again. The next slide, please. The next slide, Chair, is the value chain, which is really the business process which the committee has had us present on. After the strategy session and review of our business processes and the impact that we're making, where is it that we need to improve? We have thought it appropriate that this value chain is still valid, is still relevant. We have not changed any process. This gives effect to our legislative mandate. If we go to the next slide, please. The next slide here just indicates our focus areas, strategic focus areas in the next 5 years. Next slide, please. In the next 5 years, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, as we execute our strategy, enabled by the annual performance plans over the years, we will focus on ensuring that SIU is compliant, high performance, that is well capacitated, as we indicated there, that we would like to assist government in ridding society of corruption, maladministration, and fraud in state institutions. Chair, this is really, it's a statement. As we unpack it in our strategy, we will ensure that we've got initiatives that will support that. Number two, or that is the bottom left, that focuses on the deterrence through proactive prevention mechanisms. In this space, we will also create initiatives to ensure that we deal with corruption on a proactive basis. Top right and bottom right also goes ahead with the prevention side of doing our work. The next slide deals effectively with again our strategic focus and the enablement of our strategies. We're going to be looking at the legal space, because our niche, as it were, is to ensure that we recover based on the investigations that we conduct, and then we will ensure that the remuneration in the organization is performance based, and improve on our data analytics. Number five, as I indicated, information communication and technology. Number six, related to number three, is to ensure that we build a performing organization, both of organizational and individual, to ensure that as we remunerate our employees, is performance based. And number one, we want to ensure that as we do our work and reach the outcomes and make the impact, is communicated appropriately. Honorable Chair, those are the ongoing. The next slide, please. Next slide. This is our really just the ongoing strategic areas which I've touched on already. The improvement of our turnaround times. That is the key one, to ensure that our investigations are completed speedily. Monitoring the implementation of our referrals and consequent management. Implementing measures to accelerate civil litigation. We've seen there, Chair, that the special tribunal has really become a very important platform to speed up our civil litigation. The legislative amendments that I mentioned, they are underway. They will go through the Department of Justice to the Honorable Committee, including some of the recommendations around the funding model, and then the data analytics. I indicated number G there, that organizational and individual performance management system is something that we'd like to ensure that it's improved. The next slide really is about, you know, the journey that we have taken. Can you just scroll down, please, so that the slide shows all the contents. So this is really just the the excellence of our journey. Please scroll down, Ms. Nombulelo, just to show all the content. Without wasting time, Chair, if the Honourable Committee, thank you, can bear with us, but it's in the presentation. 19, 20, 21, 22, we would like to ensure that all of those initiatives take us to an integrated and intelligent operations. From 23 to 25, we would like to then achieve that excellence. We've got all those measurables which can be measured and audited. And then beyond that, of course, we would like a world-class organization that is ICT-enabled and data-driven analytics. The next slide, Chair, the next slide is really about the measurements. Know that that's a few minutes. These slides are really around the target now. In the administration, we have included there at the top maintenance of clean audit. That is non-negotiable, and that goes with the improvement of governance. Number two, the information communication technology. We would like to ensure that it continues to support the organization. All of this can be found on page 36 to page 45 of the APP, Honorable Chair. The next slide. The next slide, we would like to monitor the employee turnover rate. That also would talk to monitoring the vacancies in the organization, but the turnover rate would be an important indicator. And then we would like to improve on the stakeholder engagement. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, the next slide now just includes the quarterly targets of the administration program. I won't go through that in detail. The next slide focus now on the core business. Chair and Honorable Members, you see that we have really sought to increase on the targets and stretch ourselves. As you can see, on the rent value and of potential cash and rent value of actual cash, there has been quite a stretch that we improved on the 21-22 targets compared to the 2021. We've really ensured that the headlines there would be quite acceptable. We've lifted up the potential cash recovery to about 300 million and the rent, the actual recovery to 250, and it increases as the financial years go by. The next slide really indicates, and this is where we would like to see
I'll give you 10 minutes to round up.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be done in that 10 minutes. I won't go through them in detail, but this slide does indicate how we would like to see the investigations completed quickly and taking the litigation process through the special tribunal. We have increased it quite significantly to continue to show that we would like to improve on the recoveries. And then the next slide is about related referrals for disciplinary process, referrals for administrative action. I'll include here also the referrals on the executive authorities, because Chair, as we now continue to perfect and make sure that the impact is made, we would like accountability to be held at all levels, from the officials, including up to the executive authorities, accounting authorities. So all of these referrals have been worked on the basis of the investigations that are in the pipeline, and how is it that they can be increased. Of course, they would be based on the evidence that supports all of these referrals. Next slide. Again, this would still indicate the rent value of matters in respect of which evidence is referred. For civil proceedings, you see there that we've increased it quite substantially, because we want to make sure that the litigation process works and sees the appropriate recoveries and the execution of orders. Again, the number of cases in the special tribunal and then the number of reports to the president. The next slide deal with quarterly report. I'll not go through that in detail. And then the next slide, yes, this one is the market data analytics. This is where we'd like to make sure that you know, allegations that are received and allegations that are assessed are assessed 100% and none is left out, and we continue to give the whistleblowers the feedback, and that should be done 100%. None should be left out. Chair, I'm going to give over to the CFO, who in brief just indicates the budget that supports this APP. Thank you. CFO, over to you. CFO, please. Can't hear. We can't hear. CFO, please. Time is of the essence, please.
Can you hear me now? Okay. In terms of the... In terms of the 21-22 medium-term expenditure framework then, the split in the administration and investigations and market data and analytics programs, you will see a figure of 251 million expenditure on the admin side, which comprises 28% of the total expenses, 627 million on the main core business, which is the investigations, and then 28 to 29 million on the new program, market data analytics and prevention. Next slide. This summarizes, chair and members, the revenue and the expenses for the 21-22 financial year and the outer years 23 and 24. The two lines that I just want to highlight is the transfers received. You will see a figure of 437 million rounded. That was before the budget cuts, a figure of 452 million. So we were cut with 41 million for the 22 year, the 23 year, 51 million, and a further 42 million in the 24 year. So that impacts quite considerably on the budget. And you will then notice on the surplus and deficit that we're going into the SIU is going into a deficit budget for the 23 and the 24 years. We had to write to Treasury to get approval for that as per the PFMA, which Treasury approved. And those deficits, the intention is to fund them out of the surpluses that the SIU had been able to build up over the past few years. The other important figure is the staff count right at the bottom. You will see and notice that there's quite an aggressive growth in staff count, from currently 554 to 668 headcount, up to 760 and then 860, and that is to meet the growth, the aggressive growth of the incoming proclamations and investigations. Next slide. This is a summary of the debt. As at 31 March financial year end, it's still being audited. You would notice that the total debt is now standing at 531 million, which is very material. It is most probably of the highest that the outstanding debt ever was. The main reason for that, for the 21 financial year, the SIU only received a figure of about 75 million in debt recovery, in contrast to the previous financial year, where we received 355 million. We've engaged Treasury. Treasury has written to all the national departments and the municipalities in order to assist, but that unfortunately has not borne any fruit yet. The next slide is then just a tabular format or graphical presentation of the debt, where you would notice that the national entity is the majority of the debt, 140 million. The next one is the national departments and then the provinces. Of all the provinces, the Eastern Cape province is the most material debt outstanding at 82 million. Thank you, Chair and honorable members.
Thank you very much. There is no time left.
Honorable Chair, just to give the honorable committee and members an assurance, I can give the assurance to the honorable committee that we are in a sound financial position, but as we have said before, the outstanding debt, if it's really not addressed and addressed effectively, it's got a serious potential to affect our operations going forward. We are not sitting back, as the CFO has said. We are even considering, in fact, we have started engaging the Auditor General, just so that we can consider that the SIU also be considered in the audit of those state institutions, where they would probably, you know, consider SIU as a, call it a creditor, and in terms of which, if the state institutions do not pay, there should be audit findings. But as I say, it's still a consideration that would also, amongst others, that help us to drive the payment of the debtors. Chair, the next slide is really around the risks.
No,
I need to just indicate, Chair, that there is no significant risk that is not mitigated. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, can you raise hands for comments or questions? I have Honorable Swart, Honorable Jelle, Honorable Horn, Honorable Glenis Breitenbach, Honorable Nevot Johans, in that order. Honorable Swart.
No, thank you, Chair, and greetings to Advocate Matiba and your team. And again, from our side, just to congratulate you on your presentation and on the incredible work that you have done and are doing in fighting corruption and recovering ill-gotten gains. I'd like to just touch on one or two aspects whilst welcoming the presentation. I think I have expressed this view before last week when the minister and the department presented my concerns about the reduction in your funding, but I think that's made worse now by the level of debt that is owed to the SIU. 531 million is totally unacceptable, and I think, Chair, we need to make a very clear note of this in our report. And it may well be that we, in addition to the recommendations that Advocate Matiba has suggested in approaching the Auditor General as well, that we might want to have or call to account the other departments that are owing the SIU those funds, because it obviously impacts on their work. If they, and at the moment, whilst they have a reduction in their budget, can I just ask the advocate and the CFO that you indicated that you are in a relatively good position. In other words, you're able to fund the additional staff requirements, the additional forensics, but at the 23-24 outer year, you will enter a deficit. So I'd like to just get an indication from you, if this ongoing debt is not collected, what will the impact be? It is a massive debt that has increased from an outstanding previous amount and only 75 million collected. And I think that this is could well be aggravated given the fact that other departments are now facing constrained finances. So that is the first issue that I would like you to unpack a little bit more, as so that we are fully aware, given this very important role that the SKU plays. Can I then just touch on a few specific issues going forward? And maybe you would like to highlight, and we appreciate this is a view of your plans going forward. Just an update on the PPE procurement steps that you have taken, the matters that you referred to the NPA, and how that memorandum of understanding with the NPA is working, given the fact that there were concerns in the past. Is that working better when it comes to prosecution of matters? Then I'd like you to ask you about the fusion center, the operation of the fusion center. And I'd particularly like you to, and again, it's going forward. We were very impressed with the operation of the fusion center last year, this time, when the possibility of PPE contract fraud was raised and the fusion center already was taking steps. You advised us, together with the possibility of real-time audits. Now, what I'm asking you is, with the vaccination procurement, distribution, and administrative process, are there similar checks being watched? Because we're looking at a 4 billion rand expenditure going forward, and there's broad concern about the possibility of corrupt activities in that regard, both the procurement, the distribution, and the administration of vaccines. Is there a similar action or fusion center looking at that? Is there a possibility of trying to prevent corruption taking place? Then I'd like to ask generally, I appreciate the fact that there are legislative amendments proposed. We would like you to expedite that, as because of the challenge with proclamations. I want to give you a practical example. And we read in the media about alleged corruption in a High Court application relating to the Turkish Powership tender, car Powership, an estimated 200 billion rand contract over 20 years. There's a High Court application with affidavits. The Department of Mineral Affairs says they will oppose it. But what does the SIU do when you see that a High Court action has been lodged under affidavit with serious allegations of corruption? I'd ask you to specifically answer. Are you able to start an interim investigation pending a possible proclamation, given the massive extent of that contract? Thank you, Chair. At this stage, I'll stop to allow other members.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jala.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, Advocate Mkhibi and the team. Chairperson, let me just appreciate and recognize the work that is done by the SIU and the progress in their work. Indeed, we see progress, but I want to confine myself, Chairperson, on the issues of risk, because if we are not addressing the issues of risk that have been mentioned here by the team, I think we are just not going to get it to the point where we would like to see an impact on the work of the SIU. We just heard, and I think my colleague has just covered me on the issue of deaths, which is very critical, Chairperson. But also on their risk report plans, they are also indicating themselves that there is inability to financially sustain SIU operations. But I want to, I've just read something there, from their presentation, Chairperson, that they are saying they have escalated the issue with the complaints with COCTA. So I'll request that they give us a report on that one in connection with the deaths, particularly that one of the municipalities, Chairperson, and also other institutions, our institutions. And then another one, Chairperson, that I see as more threat. In fact, all of them, they are very serious, Chairperson. The issue of inadequate management of employees' performance through an output-based system. It is in the presentation. I'm worried, Chair. Why have they not yet signed those performance management contracts, all of them, Chairperson? Because they recognize it as a risk. Also, that point. Can they comment on that one, Chairperson? Another one is the failure to provide appropriate monitoring and evaluation on the services, the organization performance, organizational performance, Chairperson. They are saying they're going to develop compliance risk management and then plans, also develop compliance monitoring plan. My issue on this one, Chairperson, is that I would think that considering the work that they are doing, the seriousness on the work of the SIU, these plans should have already been in existence. I just want to find out from advocating the team as to what is the delay on this matter, because for me it is one issue that should have been already been done, because how can we go forward without having these compliance risk management plans and compliance monitoring plans. And then I will also, Chairperson, would like also to comment on the inability to provide appropriate ICT services across the SIU business. This is a very important one, particularly when we want to make sure that things are done in line with the modernization of our institutions, as we comment and also request even other institutions that are reporting to us that they need to speed up this area, particularly during this time of COVID. The communication will be very slow if this matter has been not attended to. And I appreciate and thank the team, realizing that this is one important risk, Chairperson. And I think, Chairperson, I will just request that they need to address all these issues in order to make sure that we have a speedy recovery on the monies that are lost by the government. We need that money back, Chairperson. I think we indicated to the NPA that they need to work hard on that area, because our country is facing a very difficult time when it comes to the issues of finances. So can we request that they also work hard on that area in making sure that we recover these monies, and then we are able to augment and make sure that we go forward as a country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone, and thank you to the SIU for the presentation. Yes, Chair, I'm also on the risks, and maybe, if I may say, it is possibly a pity that time ran out and we couldn't be addressed fully on the risk issue. Firstly, Chair, in respect of the ballooning debt owed by different government departments, and I took note of Mr. Mutibi just in closing remarking that none of the risks are not, they're not able to mitigate those risks. The difficulty, however, I think, in addition to what colleagues have already said, is that we've seen this movie now more or less every time the SIU appears in front of this committee. And I'm not fighting with them regarding this issue. I'm really just also sourcing their view as to whether they say, as is reflected there in their mitigation plans, whether they really believe that in a continuous engagement with both Treasury and the different entities and departments who's not paying them, whether they really believe that tendency is ever going to change, And whether we are now not at the point where we should consider also, Chair, a legislative amendment to enable Treasury to, in a more tangible way, ensure that from the budgetary allocation of departments, that the SIU at least is paid what is owed to the SIU. So from where I'm sitting, I'm really having my doubts as to whether the ongoing engagements are ever going to be really effective. Then, Chair, in respect of a number of other issues, unfortunately, I also want to say that even though there's mitigation plans, the worry is that it would seem there is a continuation of those risks being ever present. The first being the ICT, and the Honourable Maseko Jelly has already referred to that. The difficulty is that the ICT is also a recurring issue that we are being addressed on every time the SIU appears in front of us. And the same with forensic investigations. I mean, in the past, we've been informed as to, I want to say, in-house programs, learnerships, growing own timber. But yet we still have the situation where forensic and possibly even other professional services remain a risk issue for the SIU. And then while we are on those type of, I want to say, internal issues, I must already also add a concern that internal audit once again seems to be not fully capacitated. And while we are appreciative of the fact that the SIU have received a clean bill of health from the Auditor General, it must be added that a good audit outcome, of course, is there only to assist an institution, and that to not have a properly functional internal audit system ultimately exposes the SIU. And then lastly, Chair, the issue I want to raise is it is also identified as a risk that the cases before the Special Tribunal seems not to proceed as was envisaged. I mean, there's a long history of, even within this committee, and the Honourable Swart would recall that for many years the committee exerted pressure through our oversight for the Special Tribunal to be re-established. And it is a bit of a concern to note now that there is now, as it is being put in diplomatic terms, ongoing engagements with the presiding or the let's say the judge president, for a want of the correct term, of the Special Tribunal around the availability of presiding officers. And of course, that's coded language for cases being delayed. And I think we need a bit of a further unpacking of that issue. What is the current trend? Is the cases before the Special Tribunal already what must be deemed to be on the backlog roll? What are the main contributing factors? And ultimately, what is then the efficacy of the Special Tribunal in dealing with the cases brought before it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning to everybody. I've been largely covered as regards to risk and mitigation by the previous two speakers. I would, however, like to ask Advocate Matibi. I see that the SIU is still planning on purchasing a building. Is this still the case? And given the developments with regards to COVID and off-site working and people now working very effectively from home using digital platforms, can this expense really still be justified? Is it necessary? Is there some innovative way to work around that and perhaps apply those funds for a more essential purpose? Just his views on that, please. Then the in-house legal services, I agree with the introduction of such a component, but I note that the SIU says the current practicalities do not allow for the recruitment of additional capacity right now. So the operational model remains outsourcing litigation to members of the bar. That must be exorbitantly expensive. So if we could be told more or less how that balances out, if that that money used to outsource could not be more productively used to capacitate that unit. And then there was a term here that I wasn't entirely familiar with. Let me just find it. Oh, yes, the disruptive innovation. The unit talks about a market analytics project with disruptive innovation. Could I have a little bit more information about that, please? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Lebot Drachen.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to all members. Thank you, Advocate Matibi and your team for your presentation. I'd like to go back to the slide. You don't have to show them, but I'll explain it, where South Africa is one of 66% countries below 50. I'm not clear. Do we remain below 50%, but 50% of what? It says we are number nine out of how many countries? And then the next slide says out of 44. I'm not sure what that means. Are we the most corrupt, the least corrupt, or what are the statistics really about? And then I'd also like to ask with relate to the impact of COVID. What has been the COVID impact? But at the same time, Is COVID not an institutional risk? And if not, why isn't it? And then also maybe we don't have enough time, but maybe a written explanation with regards to the investigations into the Master's Office and the State Attorney's Office. Just an update with regard to how far the investigations are. And then the hotline for people to call in to report, is it used optimally, or how many, you know, what is the statistics with regard to that? And then what is the current vacancy rate? And do you have any challenges with recruiting? Have you had any challenges so far? And that's it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. Honorable Janji. Maybe he will come back. Advocate in TV.
Chair.
Honorable Janji.
Sorry, Chair. So that thing at the Pamgwa, because we can just do that after. I just wanted to thank you very much, Chair. Also, just to appreciate the progress and the future planning by SIU. I just wanted to make a couple of comments, Chair, and some go outside of the APP as issues that you might want us to think about. Advocate Mutibi, I welcoming what you're presenting. I'm missing a slide that you did not prepare, that is not here. I'm missing that slide that, because when you say COVID has forced us to do things differently, because you now are in a situation where every month the president is briefed, something that was not there before, and that every 6 months there's a particular reporting cycle. The issue, and that's why I'm saying I'm missing such a slide, because if then this is what COVID has forced us to work in a new way, are we, because I'm missing that in the APP, in the performance areas as to this new way, and therefore this is how we're planning, informed or influenced by this, and therefore this is how we're going, so that we move away from the old way of doing things. So I both in the narrative and in the plans, I see that whilst we say this as a positive thing, we kind of remain in this comfort zone of the old kind of planning. And that disjuncture for me doesn't sit well. And I'm making that as an overall point across all of them. Because if COVID has introduced this new kind of teaching to us, we should be able to make that our practice kind of going forward. So for example, if we, Chair, if we have these quarterly performance reports that we should get, which are more budget related, isn't it, and now this is coming to you, Chairs, for your guidance, isn't it also proper that how often we meet SIU, given the kind of work that they do and its critical work, that that for us every term, this term is short, so every term that we have in Parliament, we should be able to have them in front of us to follow through, not just the budget issues, but these progress actions and so on. So I'm leaving that to you, Chair, but it's an idea I'm pushing so that we stay close to SIU on quite a number of things. One of the worrying things, that's why in the slide you're not presenting, which you have not prepared, is surely if you've moved very quick in how to do things, I'm interested in the implication of that speed, Chair. The implication of that speed in relation to both, you have SIU that have moved quite quickly despite the capacity, the same capacity which was there, which they used to produce reports and actions and interventions. And now with the same capacity, which is a very important thing, because it says to us, maybe the issue is not just capacity at the stage, because with the same capacity, you are able to produce time with speed and kind of timeously. And my interest, Chair, was I take that as a serious lesson, that it is something that is doable. It did not relate to us adding another 100,000 of capacity, because in their creativity, forced with this pressure under Advocate Mutibi's leadership, SIU has been able to kind of do things differently. Call it business unusual, Chair. This is what they were able to do with the capacity that they had. And I'm interested because, so that's the first issue. The second one is, in what way has speed, Advocate Mutibi, in what way has that speed compromised the quality of the kind of reports that you have introduced? It's not showing here, but I'm digging into that space, Chair. I'm interested in that. In what way has that speed, so you need to share that with us. In that speed, has it influenced the quality of the reports that you have produced? And the best way to see that is that there must be a slide that said we if we used to do things in a year, we did them in 3 or 6 months. And in relation to us being litigated, because I'm bringing these issues, in relation to us being litigated with speed, we either see more of those litigations based on the kind of quality report, I mean, speed of report that we are producing. Because certainly, I suspect that when you put all of those things together, you'll be able to see that. For example, there's the issue of the tribunal. In the tribunal cases, up to so far, just looking back, how many cases have you kind of produced? And out of those, how many challenges have we had of those cases? And is it related to your own internal capacity or other issues? I'm really interested in these kind of questions, Chair, that COVID is teaching us how to do things differently. I'm no longer interested in ticking the box. I'm really interested in if they were forced to do things in the way they did, and we seem all of us to be happy, then it's opening another door for us as the committee, that not only for SIU, we can use this example even with others. So it's something that we must pick up and latch onto it and expect of SIU and others not to to go back to the comfort zone, to stay in this lane. You already got onto this lane. We want you to stay into this lane of how things are done without you wanting to demand more resources, more capacity when you're able to do this kind of thing. So I'm coming from a different angle, Che, so that we continue to push to push that envelope, to challenge them more. And because for me, capacity is not just about numbers. I heard him speaking about forensic attorneys and all of those. Capacity is not just about numbers. It is the style and the leadership that gets provided in terms of doing these things. So I thought I must just make those brief comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janke. Your friend, Honorable Penis Breitenbach, was complaining that she does not see you. Now I think she has heard.
Yeah, definitely. I hope she has given the dog some food and stopped the DA fights.
Thank you very much. Advocate Mtibi, the position of the deputy head, have you been able to fill it? And then there was also a question that was asked by Honorable Dennis Breitenbach about the necessity of SIU procuring the building. If you were to think otherwise and not procure the building, what would be the impact of that postponement or deferral of your decision not to procure the building in terms of the budget, to your budget? Because I think the last time I checked, you were talking about a deficit of 173 million, I think in 2023, 2024. I think most of it would also have been influenced by the issue relating to the procurement of the building. And then do you have the audit committee? Because we would like to speak to the audit committee chair when you come back, either through the quarterly reports that Honorable John is talking about, or when we deal with the BRRR reports. We would like to have the report also of the audit committee and of the chief risk officer. And then when I read your report last night, there are some targets that have been removed. Can you speak to those targets and why they were removed? Over to you.
Honorable Chair, honorable members.
Or do you need some time to discuss with your team? Because there are quite a number of these questions, and maybe we can give you 2 minutes.
We'll appreciate that, Chair. We'll appreciate the 2 minutes.
Yeah, let's come back at
particularly on the special tribunal cases. We just want to get that list and the impact, and then the CRO could probably just prepare a verbal briefing on the risk management of the risks that the honorable members have mentioned.
Okay. Can we come back? It got up at 13 minutes past 10.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
You know, all the questions in terms of some of the aspects that we would need to respond to. Honorable Swart, we really appreciate the outstanding debt, and as I indicated when we presented, if it's not acted upon, and we'd really appreciate the committee's intervention in whatever manner, we've really done what we could in the circumstances. We've engaged Treasury so that they can write to the state institutions. We indicated that from a credit management of the state institutions, we would like to engage the Auditor General so that the state institutions could be held to account. We are also of the view that, if the debt remains unpaid, at some instances, we would need to invoke the Intergovernmental Relations Act, just ultimately short of court action. But that we leave that to the last, so that if we enforce the payment of debt against state institutions through court processes, we would like, as we say, to leave that to the last. But it's not something that is not in our view. Honourable Swart, on the PPE investigations, we are pleased to report to the Honourable Committee that we have met the last reporting cycle. It's 6-weekly report. We submitted the report to the President. The latest is submitted on the 30th of April, 2021. Just to give the committee the highlights, and we appreciate that, as Honorable Janti indicated, we'll appreciate whichever way the committee could like SIU to come back and report, would be in a position to report in detail on the PPE investigations. But to date, Chair, a combination of finalized matters and ongoing matters count up to 94%. We have made a significant progress and impact because as we investigate, there are still new matters that have been reported, and I've said to the team that we can't close new matters being reported. Otherwise, we'll be failing in our mandate. Although we want to close these investigations, but we also can't close out the new allegations being reported. So that now contributes to investigations still to commence. As at the 30th of April, it's 6%. And that's compared to the big amount that we've done. And again, as at the 30th of April, the amount of irregular contracts or allegations pointing to irregular contracts or PPE, as at the 30th of April, stands at 14.2 billion. And that's the contract value. And again, we will talk about the list of the special tribunal cases. Remember, this is the contract value, and in appropriate instances, we take it to the special tribunal. And at the end of the adjudication, just and equitable orders are made, and then we recover the appropriate amount. So, Chair, Honorable Swart, we are pleased really to report that we have made this significant progress, and we have shown outcomes, which, of course, for purposes of today, we'll not go into detail on, but we are really in a position to present to the committee at an appropriate time where the committee can call upon SIU to do that. The fusion center continues to be a center that really adds value. We have recognized that in most of the cases, had it really not been of the fusion center collaboration and operation, we would probably have taken longer to return some of the outcomes. A typical example is the PPE investigation in the Gauteng Health Department. We have been able to follow the money and freeze some of the monies with the assistance of the Fusion Center and in particular the FIC. And with regard to other investigations, those that where we find criminal evidence or evidence pointing to criminal act, we refer that to NPA and we also copy the hawks and we work collaboratively to ensure that the matters are addressed and investigated quite on time. So we have really seen value. Now, with some of the ongoing investigations, we have also seen the value of the Fusion Center. In some of the cases, we are currently busy with the Department of Education investigation in Gauteng, in the PPE irregularities. We are continuing to see the same value that Fusion Center has given us in the health investigation, and we will be pronouncing on some of those outcomes which we have pronounced on in the report to the President. The investigation is still ongoing, but I'm just really responding to the Honourable Member's question, Honourable Swart. Fusion Centre continues to show the value that we really created it for or that it was created for. On the vaccination program, I'm pleased also to report that there's an interministerial committee that I think led by the Deputy President. The operations part of that committee, there's a committee that SIU is also part of. And we have been called upon to share some of the experiences in the PPE procurement irregularities with the view of adding on the risk mitigation plan around the vaccination program. And our CRO, who will be commenting later, has been part of that. And we are pleased to say that we have shared our views and that risk mitigation plan was put in place in that process. It continues to be monitored. With regard to the possibility of an interim investigation, Honourable Swart, yes, it is possible that we could do that. We continue to do with the state institutions where there is no proclamation yet. There is a provision in our law, in our enabling legislation, that we could engage with the state institution and conclude what's called a secondment agreement so that we can investigate these matters. With the litigation process, we also monitor some of the litigations that are going on in the state institutions, and we approach where we could be a party of interest so that we can assist the state institution. We reach out so that we can be part of that litigation. Honourable Jenner, the risk matters or the risk institutional risk that we have indicated, we do as we do the strategic assessments, we do also conduct the risk assessments, and most of the risks could probably be similar to the previous year's risks, simply because as operational risks and strategic risks, the nature of our operation is such that those operational risks will not sort of change in nature. But we ensure that the mitigation plans are always there to ensure that those risks do not realize. And the point I made at the end, as Honorable Horn indicated, we are satisfied because we do have the risk management teams led by the chief risk officer, and he will come in and talk to that. They do monitor the risks, and we've got a risk committee that is independently chaired, and that chair sits on the audit committee to continuously report on this risk. Perhaps at this stage, I should pause. If our CRO is available, perhaps you could come in, CRO, just to assure the committee around the risk management process. Good morning, honorable members, and thank you, Advocate Matsibe. Honorable members, just to give assurance, in terms of our model, our framework, we identify the risk every year, first review the previous year's risk, of which when identify a risk, our model says is something that will occur. So we identify this risk and say what can prevent us from achieving our objectives. So in this case here is something that is not happening yet, but we are putting measures in place that this risk will not happen, which are well managed at the moment. But they are reviewed every quarterly to make sure that they are still up to date. Then when we respond to you formally, I will put more meat in terms of the risk to show what are the risk triggers and what are the what impact will it have to the organization if it happens, so that you can have more meat and analyze them more better to understand as well. At the moment, I can say that it is working effectively. Then as well, there was also on the hotline, the question was, is it effectively? I can say the hotline as well falls under risk. Is it, if it is effectively, in 2020-21, we have received 667 complaints or reports compared to 2019-20, where there were 272. So it means our hotline people are becoming to trust it more and report the allegations. So at the moment, we have even have the programming just came through the whistleblowing hotline, which shows that is also effective. Then as well on the risk report, we will comply as well. We'll also provide the risk report when we come to report together with the risk committee report as requested. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, CRO. Just to add on, Chair, in the formal report, of course, we will indicate what's called the RAG status, RAG, which is the red, orange, and green status of these risks, just so that the committee can see how these risks are appropriately mitigated. Honorable Jada, you also asked around the performance agreements. At this stage, we are actually busy signing those agreements. We've noted, and of course, that this is a delayed implementation. As we reported before, it was really delayed as a result of engagement and consultation with the recognized trade union, but we have since agreed around this, that it's something that we have to do. The Honorable Committee has indicated to us that this has to be done, and we engaged, and we've also made sure that the templates that are required are put in place. We started, all the executive members, you know, will have assigned agreements. Of course, we've been using the operational agreements that will translate into performance agreements. All the provincial heads will have performance agreements and the ones below them. I know that our Chief Human Capital Officer may be in the meeting, but we actually will do that. We'll submit to the committee the timelines within which all these agreements will be done. And that we can submit in the next 7 days, because we do have a plan, Honorable Chair, through you, if the committee permits, we can submit that. Honorable Horn, again, the question around the risks, I think we have responded on that. The risk committee and the CRO will also submit a formal report. The issue around the ballooning debt, we really appreciate that if there could be legislative changes, whichever that are appropriate on enabling the National Treasury, but also on enabling SIU through the legislative amendments that will be put through. The issue around internal audit capacity, we do agree, but internal audit, we've just again now just made an appointment of the in-sourced audit audit capacity. I think it started now in April. So we are now at a stage where, you know, the status quo in terms of capacity remains. The audit function will continue to be able to audit. But of course, we would like to ensure that the audit has its own resources. And this is the plan that the audit committee is monitoring, so that we reduce insourcing of audit capacity, as of course it's quite costly. Cases in the special tribunal, on this one, I'd like to really just say, and our chief legal counsel is on standby to just give further assurance. We have seen tremendous progress in this space. The cases that have been enrolled or issued at the special tribunal, they've really surpassed our expectation. And the chief legal counsel will indicate that now, both relating to specifically on the PPE outcomes, which as at the 30th of April, the report that we submitted, we had submitted in the special tribunal the matters to the value of about 126 million. The chief legal counsel could probably correct this. I'm reading from the report that we submitted, but it's quite a significant amount. So some of the really critical or key success we have seen the outcomes of the Bay Bridge litigation. We've defended that matter, and that matter was ruled in our favor. The next step now is to ensure that the special tribunal cancels the agreements and we recover the monies that the state, particularly the Department of Public Works, has spent. The challenge that the parties there had mounted was that the special tribunal has got no jurisdiction, and that has been adjudicated. So we defended, our matter, of course it was up to the special tribunal to rule. The matters related to the PPEs, those are really some of the critical examples where we've had various orders in favor of SIU, where we have cancelled matters, where we have cancelled the contracts. Another typical example, of course that was not brought by us, it was brought by the previous MEC of Health in Gauteng. He sought to challenge our outcomes. And Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, and this talks to the value part that Honorable Janti raised, that as we investigate, we ensure that we also produce the outcomes that are value-based, legal sound, and to ensure that they withstand any challenge. We are pleased, after a lengthy and marathon litigation process, that the court ruled in our favor. That court has settled the issue that, at the level of the executive authority, there are responsibilities and duties that the executive authorities are enjoined with. So the point I made, that accountability starts from officials up to the accounting officers and accounting authorities up to the executive authority. Of course, there are legal provisions related to all of these levels in terms of PSMA, constitution, and so on. So as we investigate, and the point that I continuously made to our colleagues, because I am quite vocal to our colleagues, that as we turn around our investigation speedily, we must never ever compromise on the quality. Perhaps at this stage, because it's about the special tribunal cases, our chief legal counsel is ready, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, to just give the committee the assurance in this space. Dr. Wells, over to you, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Advocate Matibi. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Just a brief overview. I think Advocate Matibi has substantively dealt with the question itself. I would just like to add some further stats. 69 matters has of date been issued in the tribunal with a contract value of just over 7 billion. In terms of PPEs, matters pending presently with the tribunal is 15 matters, which to the value of 365 million. Now, Chair, to date, several orders, preservation orders, have been handed down by the tribunal. In total, 13, but notably, what the tribunal has done is also issued preservation orders, that is the forfeiture orders. And two of those have significantly been issued this year, totaling in excess of 44 million rand, Chair. One of those matters, or both of those matters, are presently pending, and appeal has been lodged against both those matters. Chair, there are a number of other issues where we've, other cases where we've also frozen monies that have been deposited into accounts by various service providers for officials of state institutions, and those accounts have also been frozen. Just to highlight the importance, Chair, in terms of the tribunal, is that the number of cases finalized, despite the COVID conditions that prevail, is much more significant than what we've experienced by our litigation in terms of the high courts. Similar numbers have been issued, and if I say numbers, is matters that have been issued in the High Court, and one or two of those matters have been finalized over a period of a financial year. In this case, we can say that these matters that have been issued in the tribunal, approximately just for the PPE matters, that including the others, that 13 orders have already been issued just over a period of 8 to 12 months. Now, Chair, the significance of all of this is that this is helped by the judges that has been appointed in the tribunal. The cases are actively case managed, and the time periods for matters to be finalized is much, much shorter, and the impact is greater. Chair, if there's any specific questions to address any of the issues raised, I will do so.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wells. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, just on the question raised by Honourable Horn, it's in the risk, institutional risk part, where we're indicating that as a risk, the inability to expedite and timely conclude civil matters. But we had to identify that as a risk linked to this strategic outcome of improving or increasing the recoveries. So we're saying a risk related to that could be the inability to conclude our civil matters. And that could be a factor of various matters, including, you know, engaging with the tribunal president if there are issues there. But it is important to note that the tribunal is independent of SIU, but we do, if there are issues, we do from time to time engage. And of course, those mitigation plans are meant to ensure that the risk itself does not materialize. At the moment, the risk has not realized, as Dr. Wells has presented to the committee. We continue to see the value of the special tribunal. And thanks, Dr. Wells, for correcting the figure that I had indicated to the Honorable Committee, and I apologize for understating the value of the PPE matters that are in the special tribunal. So, Honourable Chair, we really are pleased that the Special Tribunal is proving to have value for what it was meant for. Honourable Brayton Buff, the SIU is planning on purchasing a building. That was in the plan, but we have, of course, with the observation of the fiscal constraints, that we sought to not pursue that with the timelines that we have had before. At the moment, what we are doing, we are seeking to just optimize on the space that we have, where we are at the moment, because we, apologies, we do realize that going out to purchase a building could probably be, costly, and then, of course, it will not mean well for the current fiscal constraints. But in this regard, there has been a plan that from our finance department, they've sought to make provisions for this based on some of the engagements we have had with the Department of Justice. Their plans going forward, as we engaged them at the time, was that they are looking at creating a justice precinct, and all of the entities reporting into justice would probably have to make some input, right? So I suppose this is still at an early stage. We are still to further engage with justice, but the extent to which we'll need to make a provision, and perhaps at this stage it could just be useful to bring in again the CFO so that he can just assure the committee around this space. CFO?
Thank you, Advocate Motivi. Yes, with regards to, and then let me just talk about the cash resources that we've been able to build up over the last few years. At year end, despite the challenges in the debt recovery, we were able to end the year.
CFO, can you turn on your video?
Here we go.
Thank you.
Apologies, Chair. So despite the challenges in the recovery of debt, we were able to end the year with about 741 million in the bank. So how we see, we will use that figure, a big portion of that will be used to actually fund the deficit over the next 3-4 years. So to answer the question of financial sustainability, we do have, as we stand, we do have enough cash to sustain ourselves over the next 3-4 years. However, we do still see that the financial model, the funding model, needs to change to address the systemic deficiencies. Included in the figure that we've, let me say, reserve, and that we will motivate to Treasury to retain the cash surplus, is still a figure of about 150 million. So we still do see it prudent to reserve that figure in order for Treasury not to take away the cash resources of the SIU. Now we see the funding model change over the longer term is that from a legislative point of view, we do see that there's a conflict of interest where currently we are invoicing the state institutions, and we're pursuing a model whereby National Treasury could either centralize the invoicing with them themselves or with the presidency under their budget allocation, so that there's no conflict of interest. If we investigate somebody, then we have to rely on them to pay us. So that's the sort of discussions that we're having with Treasury. They have, however, indicated over the next 5 years, it is unlikely that we would receive increase in the actual allocation, the grant allocation. And in fact, they've cut us. We hold the view that in the bigger scheme of things, that the SIU should not be, as an entity, a fraud-fighting entity, be cut. And in fact, our budget allocation should be slightly increased. That's just to respond to all the financial related questions, Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you.
thank you, CFO. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. With regard to the in-house legal services, Honorable Breitenbach, yes, that is still the plan, because in accordance with our legislation, those SIU members who are legally qualified and are have got the right of appearance, they could actually be appearing in the courts on behalf of SIU. But we would like to make sure that you know, we build up that capacity. And already in Dr. Wells' space, we have made a few appointments, and we are beginning to see that those appointments are ensuring that we speed up the litigation process. But of course, at this stage, where we need counsel appearance, we still go through the state attorney and appoint counsel to appear on behalf of SIU. But we do take the point that going forward, we should build up this capacity to ensure that we do it in-house. With regard to the term disruptive innovation, I think we've really just benchmarked some of the terms, and going forward, we will really uncode or unpack some of these terms so that we do make sense. But the disruptive innovation, I think it's really a terminology that's used particularly in the technology space or in the innovation space generally. We would like to innovate such that we disrupt the trends of corruption, the trends of maladministration, and ensure that we ultimately bring down those trends. So the innovation is very much around, you know, our business processes and on the IT space. And I know that Honorable Janji did indicate that we have said that COVID has changed the way we do things, but where is it in the APP, where is unpacked? Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we probably just didn't go into detail, but if you look on under Program 1, in administration, on those targets, there is a output indicator saying implementation of an approved ICT project plan for data analytics capability. And it's, as you can see, 2017-18 and 18-19, 19-20. Up to now, 2021, is the new indicator in the APP. So with the permission of the committee again, we could outline in detail what this ICT plan is about. Because this ICT plan should be the one that really enables us to do this innovation, and so that we are ultimately able to assess whether we have been as disruptive as we want to be to those corrupt and those maladministrators out there. So we do have a plan that we can unpack to the committee. In terms of the scoring, and this is the external environment from the Honorable Member, the scoring, it's almost relating to the Transparency International and some of the scoring organizations. They would normally score us out of the various countries in Africa and international. But we can provide that. So that scoring does indicate where we are globally as South Africa and where we are continentally. So and that part, we are aware that we cannot alone as SIU influence the scoring of South Africa. We can do that as a collective. And just recently in the JCPS, SIU was given the responsibility to just go do a research around what does Transparency International take into account when they score the country and our CRO, our Chief Risk Officer, and the JCPS gave a mandate to the ACTT that we should actually come up with a plan as ACTT for the country. What is it that we can do to improve on this scoring? So, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, this part in our APP is to really ensure that we continue to understand what our role is in contributing to the collective plan under ACTT and JCPS, and now going to be driven by the National Anti-Corruption Strategy. So we will continue to make sure that we are part of that. The hotline, I think our CRO has responded to that. And then there's a question around what is the current vacancy rate? Honorable Chair, with your permission, I'm going to just ask our Chief Human Capital Officer to respond later on this. I don't want to give the Honorable Committee a wrong number here. I want our Chief Human Capital to give that number. But we are satisfied that we have really closed it. With all this recruitment that has been going on, we have reduced our vacancy rate significantly. Honorable Janji, yes, the missing slides, which I think relates to the way of doing things, the new way of doing things. And we really acknowledge with appreciation the view that we have done our best, and we continue to do our best. I urge our colleagues that we cannot revert back to the previous ways of doing things, where SIU almost ran a reputational risk of taking long to investigate. We can't slide back to that. And we have said to ourselves that we have set a standard with the COVID-19 investigations, and that standard must stay, right? With other investigations. My colleague, Mr. Lakheto, who is the Chief National Investigating Officer, has got a review plan, which I have asked him to do. He will review all other investigations on a regular basis, the same way we're doing with the COVID-19 investigations. The COVID-19 investigations, I personally chair the review processes, and in the review processes, Chair, we check how are the investigations doing, what resources are there that are needed, how is it that the teams can be assisted, and to ensure that we produce the outcomes that are supported by evidence. Evidence-based outcomes, so that we continue to make the impact that we require. We monitor the cases that are at the special tribunal. We monitor the outcomes that comes from the investigation. So, Honorable Janji and Honorable Committee members, we can assure the committee that, of course, yes, with the limited resources that we have, and Honorable Janji, perhaps in principle, it is probably accurate to make that observation, to say perhaps it was really not about headcount here. It was really around how we manage our business. And we have really disrupted ourselves, if I can put it like that. And we noticed that, if we do things better, if we monitor the investigations, and we just identify the gaps from a resource point of view, what's required to ensure that we support the investigations, we do our timesheets appropriately. That has shown us that, effective monitoring and management, as you correctly say, Honorable Janji, that perhaps is about the style of management. And we believe that we have said to our teams that this is the test of time. we need to ensure that we demonstrate to the public that, you know, we can do it as SIU. And I believe with humility and humbly that we have managed to do that with the PPE investigation, as massive as it was, but we need to make sure that we don't slide back. Of course, we have identified some of those needs from a resource perspective that we need to augment, particularly around, you know, some of the accounting space, the forensic accountants. That is a niche and an area. Because, for example, and I've made this example before, if we go into Transnet or Eskom, those huge state institutions, and, you know, we draw out the balance sheets and the income statements, we want the capability to make sure that we interpret that as speedily as possible, and we can be able to flow, to follow the flow of money. So that's the part that we want to, we do have accountants, but they are really few, given the mammoth work that is facing us. So, Honorable Janti, the COVID has indeed changed the way we do work. And as I said, we could unpack to the committee the next time we appear, or as early as any time the committee would like us to submit the ICT plan. And that ICT plan would then indicate how is it that we're going to support the investigation going forward. What way has the speed compromised the report? As I indicated, Honorable Janji, that we do take into account that, of course, there's a need to turn around our investigation as speedily as possible, but of importance is to make sure that we gather and investigate, gather evidence in legally defensible manner. It should be credible evidence that we can defend in a court of law or anywhere, be it at the disciplinary process when the state institutions discipline accountable members. The evidence that we refer to NPA, of course, NPA with the Hawks can still sort of make sure further criminal investigations. But on the civil litigation space, this is the process that we have got control and end to end. We would like to make sure that as we investigate and gather the evidence to go and challenge and set aside the contract, this would be a defensible evidence. And to date, we have seen most of those orders that have been issued. They've been issued in favor of SIU, the well-known scooter case in the Eastern Cape, the OR Tambo door-to-door has been ruled in our favor. There's been various cases in the KZN around the blanket cases. All those matters have been ruled in our favor. Needless to repeat, in the Department of Health in Gauteng, in the Northwest, in various provinces. So we are humbly pleased that our investigators, they do the investigations with the speed and the credibility that has to be attended to the evidence that is gathered. How many cases are in the special tribunal? I think our chief legal counsel has responded to that. We continue to urge our teams to investigate with speed because the special tribunal has been put in place to adjudicate on matters emanating from SIU investigations. So we need to continue to make sure that it adds value. Don't go back to the comfort zone, Honorable Janji. We can assure the Honorable Committee that we will keep on that trajectory and ensure that all the senior managers, all the members of SIU are quite aware that it's business unusual. Just in the interest of ensuring that we make the impact that the Honorable Committee and members of the public would like to see us make, as SIU and of course contributing to the wider fight against corruption and maladministration. Honorable Chair, the deputy head position has not been filled yet. We are in the process of ensuring that we will advertise and make sure that it's filled appropriately. There has been, with all this recruitment that are going on, we wanted to make sure that the operations area is filled up appropriately. But of course, there is a need to ensure that that position is also filled up. The procurement of the building, I think we've responded to that, Honourable Chair, and CFO has also indicated the deficit in the outer years. Yes, we have noticed that, and of course, the resources, the balance, the surplus that we have built, it may really look that it's quite an amount now, but with the outer years, you can see that it's beginning to go down, and that's why we really want to push the payment of the debt, debt book that is addressed, and to ensure that in the outer years, we continue to sustain our business. Do we have an audit committee? Yes, we do have an audit committee, Honourable Chair, and we will pass on the message that the Honourable Committee would like to interact with the audit committee. The Honourable Committee would recall that at some point during our appearance, the Chair of the audit also appeared, but we will pass on the message that they need to continue to prepare the report that they can independently present to the Honourable Committee, and the CRO has taken note that the Honourable Committee would like a formal report from the Chief Risk Officer. Honourable Chair, with your permission, I can pause here and see if there's further questions that we need to attend to. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Advocate Mtibi, and to your team. Indeed, it was a very good report that indicates that you are hard at work. We are very grateful. South Africa has prioritized a fight against crime and corruption as one of our number one priorities. So we are pleased that an agent like yourself is hard at work to ensure that we fight crime and corruption, because it deprives resources that should be at the disposal of government to fight hunger and inequalities in our country. Just a few issues before we close. One of the things that we think that it stands out from what you have presented, which would be good for members of parliament and I think even cabinet ministers, it's the jurisprudence that you are developing through your cases around issues of accountability. I think if it can be packaged in such a way that even with the inductions of MPs or MPLs, cabinet ministers, mayors, MECs, premiers, I think that is one area that we should be focusing on, because I think you can see with the Gauteng case that it's one of the areas that we think that judgment might be groundbreaking, and it would be really important that there are wider workshops that are held to explain what does this accountability mean, and as far as executive authorities are concerned, and I think even members of parliament are concerned, what should they look for? Because I think there is also quite a, I think people are not that much aware in detail about it. So I think it should be important that you can, maybe whether it's a booklet or workshops around the issues of accountability, taking the judgment of the tribunal as a point of departure. I also saw that you are making inroads in the use of robotics and for IR in improving your operational efficiencies. So I think as part of the ICT plan that you might, in fact, that we would like you to present in detail taking into account the suggestion that was made by Honorable Janji that we might need to increase the frequency of meeting you, that one of the first areas that we might want to go to in detail with yourselves is the issue of the ICT plans and the use of 4IR to reduce operational costs and to increase operational efficiencies. It's one area that I think the whole of government is grappling with. I think everybody is talking 4IR, but I don't think that many of us understand in much detail as to how it can be leveraged properly. What does it mean to be leveraged properly in terms of increasing efficiencies operationally? Because I also get a sense that in most cases when people talk about 4IR, they're talking just about automation and mass processing. But I would appreciate that you give us a detailed plan on your side, because we also want to use your experiences and your areas where we think that you are a touch better on our side, as to use you as SIU as change agent, so that even other entities of government, even other departments, they can learn from you as to how this issue is dealt with. The other issue that members, I think I propose that the chair be given a mandate to do, is to write to the speaker, that the speaker writes to the president, because ultimately it is the president that signs proclamations, that all the department entities, organs of state, and other layers of government, that is a matter of agency, they need to pay all the outstanding debt, and the president takes leadership in as far as that matter is concerned. The reason being, I don't think that if we are to prioritize the fight against crime and corruption, we need to have a situation where we are focusing on minimum resources. What we should focus thing is resource, because I think there is a problem that governments all over the world, they seem to one way or the other have given up to the fact that criminals have more resources than them, especially in dealing with issues of organized crime, in dealing with issues of corruption, in dealing with issues of illicit financial outflows. Because I was reading somewhere that even the organized crime groups in Japan are more resourced than the government of Japan. So we do need a change of approach as government, that this issue of corruption, it's generally a point, a trigger point, that if it can be successfully dealt with, then we would unlock a lot of resources that can deal with the issues of unemployment, poverty, and inequalities. So I think as a first point of departure, if you have a debt of 531 million, that is too much for a small organization like SIU. And if we can have that, most of that debt recovered, then it would give the SIU the necessary teeth to be able to prioritize the fight that we have prioritized as a country. And then lastly, you have been promising with the Department of Justice that you are going to bring this legislation that is going to deal with some of the issues that you have referred to. Our fear is that there are quite a number of organizations, the Public Protector, the NPA, it's yourselves, and many others who are looking at overhauling their legislations. So the later you delay, the more problem it is going to be, because we only have next year. That year, it will be an election year. So it will be important that most of those bills that you think that are urgent and have a serious impact on your operations and on your survival as an organization need to be prioritized, because the longer you delay, we might not have time as this sixth administration to deal with such a legislation, because some of them are quite bulky. For instance, the overhauling of the Public Protector is going to take a lot of time. So the sooner the better. But thank you very much. We are quite pleased and encouraged by the work that you do and the report that you have given us. But we are going to increase the frequency of the time we have with you and focusing on specific areas of interest to the committee. Some of those areas are for us to understand certain issues much more better, even as the committee and as parliament, especially the issue of ICT and F4IR, because I think I'm much more interested in your use of robotics. Thank you very much, Advocate Mtibi, and to your team. Thank you very much. I saw that Advocate Tlakula has already
Thank you.
In.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chair and honorable members. We appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Go back. Stay where you are. Go up.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Janji. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, can we have until 11:15, it's 11 minutes past, to allow the information regulator to be able to load their slides and welcome Advocate Tlakula and your team. We'll just give you 4 minutes to be able to do all your logistical arrangements. Thank you very much.
I'm Zondi. I'll be sharing the slides, but I would like to request the host to allow me to share screen. Thank you.
Thank you. Consider that done.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, and all members.
Thank you very much. I will now hand over to you to take us through the presentation. We will give you 30 minutes to do the presentation, then you can interact.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning. This is how we're going to proceed. I'm going to make introductory remarks for no more than 5 minutes, and then I'll hand over to the acting CEO to present. Maybe to start by expressing our condolences, Honorable Chairperson and members, for the passing away of Honorable Chekimo Fumi, who was a member of this committee. We did send you a written letter of condolences, but I thought it was appropriate for us to start there.
Thank you very
the
much.
Second thing that I'd like to do is to inform you, Chairperson. You might be surprised that you see that Mr. Musalanyane Musala is back. In November last year, Mr. Tibela, who was our CEO, resigned from the information regulator, and we immediately requested Mr. Musalanyane Musala, who started with us in 2017, to come back. We requested the Department of Justice to second him again, and he has been with us since the beginning of the year, and we have started yesterday we conducted interviews for the position of the CEO. We will not go into preparations for 1st July 2021 because the committee has already informed us that we have to brief it either on the 1st or 2nd June 2021 on preparations for the 1st of July 2021. We appreciate, Chairperson, the fact that our budget has been increased for this financial year by more than 90%. Our communication with the Minister of Finance and the National Treasury officials have borne fruit. Of course, the budget is still not sufficient, but we appreciate the fact that we were given an increase. In fact, most of the entities and government departments, as you know, their budgets were cut because of the current financial situation. The listing of the regulator, Honorable Chairperson and members, is a matter that remains unresolved. We have decided to take this matter into our hands. You'll recall that National Treasury had undertaken to look into this matter. Some of the, in fact, the proposals that they have put before us, I don't think they fit the kind of organization that we are. So we've decided that we should actually look at this matter ourselves, and we will then, after we have come up with a proposal, we'll even table it before the committee and before we take it to the National Treasury. The issue of the independence of the regulator is another one that remains unresolved. We're still dependent on the systems and the policies of the Department of Justice. We have drafted a separation strategy. Of course, our separation strategy, it will require a lot of money to implement. We are in discussion with the Department of Justice because of concern really is their IT capability to be able to assist us to do the kind of things that the legislation wants us to do. And also just the capacity of their infrastructure is a matter that is of concern. So the sooner we are able to have our own IT infrastructure, the better. We appreciate, Chairperson, the appointment of a part-time member, Ms. Tilly. Her appointment has increased the much-needed capacity in the regulator. Finally, we are pleased that the committee has started discussions on the recruitment of members of the regulator because, as you know, the term of 4 members of the regulator is coming to an end at the end of 2020, and it will be good, Chairperson, if the members are appointed, the new members are appointed before that. Those, Chairperson, are my introductory remarks. And with that, and with your kind permission, I'll then hand over to Mr. Musalanyana Musala to make the presentation. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, over to you, Mr. Musalanyana.
Good morning to the Honourable Member. And thank you very much for the opportunity to make a presentation on the APP of the Information Regulator. As you can see, the outline of the presentation is Information Regulator Mandate, Update to Policy, Strategic Focus, Situational Analysis, APP and Quarterly Targets, the budget and the medium-term expenditure framework, and enablers. Chairperson, starting with the mandate of the regulator. The mandate has not changed, Chairperson. We still have a constitutional mandate. The regulator was established to ensure respect for and to protect, enforce, and fulfill the rights to privacy and the rights to access to information. and two pieces of legislation were enacted to give effect to this mandate, which is POPEA and PAEA, and the legislative mandate in terms of POPEA is to provide education, monitor and enforce compliance, consult with interested parties, handle complaints, conduct research, develop codes of conduct. In terms of PAEA, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, is to handle complaints, to conduct investigations.
I think let's dump the mandate because it has not changed. Let's go to the areas that you would want us to consider, because at this rate, you might not do everything in 30 minutes.
Okay, I'll do that, Honorable Chairperson. If you go to the next slide, Chair, I think the main issue in the last slide there, Chair, is the proclamation by the President to bring into effect the remaining sections of POPEA on the 1st of July. And to this effect, the readiness plan will be presented to this committee on the 2nd of June. So that is the update on policy. If you go to the next slide, Chairperson, on the strategic focus, nothing has changed, Chair. The vision is still the same, the mission is still the same, and the values are still the same values. And then we can go to the situational analysis, Chairperson. On the external environment, Chair, there are opportunities and threats. I think the opportunity for the regulator, Chairperson, is that the coming effect of the remaining sections of POPEA will contribute towards building trust. And this trust will most probably, you know, contribute to foreign and local investors coming into the country. But there are threats in the external environment as well, Chair. The Chairperson has already spoken to the issue of the regulator not being listed, but we all know that the issues of COVID-19 also pose a threat as it relates to IT and the development of IT by organizations that could come back and impact on the work of the regulator. Looking into the environment inside the regulator, Chairperson, we've got strengths and weaknesses. In terms of our strengths, we are currently building capacity in terms of recruitment, Chair, and we will talk to that in some of the slides. Our weakness is still what the Chairperson has raised around the delay in separate from the Department of Justice, but also to recruit scarce skills is the weakness of the regulator. Moving to the actual work of the regulator, Chairperson, we have got five programs, Chair. What we have planned, Chair, is about 27 indicators. Each program, I'll just take you through the main issues around each one of them. Program one, Chairperson, is a program that deals with protection of personal information, and it has got six indicators. Indicator one deals with percentage of complaints pre-investigated. And our target, Chair, is 50% of pre-investigated complaints finalized. And we've broken that target into four quarterly targets, and it's a cumulative breakdown, Chairperson. The second indicator, Chair, is application of codes of conduct finalized within the prescribed time frame. And the annual target, Chairperson, is application for codes of conduct finalized within 13 weeks from the date of receipt. And we have also broken that annual target into four quarterly targets. The next one, Chair, is percentage of prioritized action in the readiness plan implemented. And we're intending to implement 100% of the prioritized actions. And these prioritized actions will be presented to the committee on the second meeting. If you move to the next slide, Chair, the fourth indicator under OPEA is percentage of information officers registered as prescribed. And our annual target is to have 100% of information officers registered as prescribed. And the next one deals with approved guidance note on exemptions from POPEA. And the guidance note will be a quarterly target only, where we'll be tabling and getting approval on the guidance note. The next one, Chairperson, is percentage of application for exemptions from POPEA finalized, and we're saying 100% of those applications will be finalized as an annual target. And we move to the next program, which is program two, Honorable Chairperson. It's promotion of access to information PAEA, and we've got three indicators. Indicator seven is percentage of complaints pre-investigated and finalized. And we have a 50% as the annual target of pre-investigated complaints finalized. And it's also broken down into four quarterly targets. Indicator number eight deals with approved PAEA manual. And we got only quarter one target there, that the PAEA manual will be approved and be uploaded on the website. Indicator number nine, electronically available and uploaded on the website. And we've got approved procedure as the annual target. And then the quarterly target will deal with the drafting, the consultation, the tabling, and the actual approval and the uploading on the website. We go to program three, Chairperson, which is education and communication. We've got six indicators there, Chairperson. Indicator number 10 deals with public awareness and education strategy developed. This is a strategy that we presented before the committee about 2 years ago, and we're now revising it, giving a new development. And our annual target there, Chairperson, is approved strategy and plan, and the quarterly target will be broken down into development up to aligned testing implementation. The next indicator, Chair, is 11, awareness programs aimed at promoting the protection of personal information and access to information conducted. We are planning 24 public awareness sessions in all provinces as an annual target, Chair, and is broken down into four quarterly targets, as stated there, per quarter. The next one, Chair, will be communication and branding strategy and plan developed. We are intending to have an approved strategy and plan approved. So there will be that breakdown as well, Chairperson. I'm not going to go through those. The next one is communication programs and products developed and implemented. The regulator intends to implement 188 communication products and programs, and they'll be broken down into quarterly targets of 47 each per quarter. And then indicator number 14, Chairperson, is stakeholder engagement strategy and plan developed. It's again a revision of the stakeholder engagement strategy that we've had. Given circumstances that have changed, we have decided to do that revision. And it will be done according to the way it's stated per quarter. And the next one will be, Chairperson, stakeholder engagement sessions held. We're planning to have 90 stakeholder engagements held, and those sessions are broken down into four quarterly targets. We'll now move on to program four, Chairperson, which is legal policy research and information technology analysis. There, Chairperson, we've planned six indicators. Indicator 16 talks to the percentage of prioritized action in the readiness plan. And it will be one of those that we'll present on the second when we come back to the committee. We're intending to achieve 100% of those actions. The next one will be approved POPEA compliance framework for the regulator. Chair, this indicator deals with our own internal compliance as the regulator. We need to lead by example. We need to also to comply with our own with the same POPIA requirements as other organizations. So we'll have that developed and implemented. And then the next one deals with approved rules for procedure for the enforcement committee. Chair, you know that the Act require us to establish the enforcement committee. So work has begun. So we're intending to get the rules of procedure for the enforcement committee approved as an annual target. We also need to have a legal strategy, Chair, and we would want to have our approved legal strategy approved, and we'll start the development in quarter one and ending with approval in the last quarter. The next indicator, Chair, deals with the number of research projects in line with the approved research strategy that is implemented. We already have a research strategy. We need to refine it, but then we need to begin with implementing it, and we're intending to have process projects in line with those, and we'll have to finalize research papers at the end of the financial year. The next indicator, Chair, will deal with approved POPIA personal impact assessment for the regulator. It's also an inward looking work, Chair. This impact assessment will be implemented at the end of the financial year, so we'll be ready with that. We move on to program 5, Chairperson, which is administration. It has got 3 sub-programs. Office of the Chief Executive Officer, which has got 1 indicator on the approved separation strategy, which our Chairperson has spoken to, that we need to have an approved separation strategy, and we have started to develop policy proposals to try and address the policy gaps that exist in order to address the issues of classification of the regulator. So we'll have those the proposals developed, we'll consult internally and externally, and then like the Chairperson has explained. The next one, should we do really bring the targets of corporate services to the attention of members. But we feel at this stage in the life of the regulator, we need to bring it up at a strategic level. So we have 3 indicators that deal with corporate services. The first one is approved human resource strategy and plan, and would want that to be approved. But the work that is in that strategy will find expression in the operational plan of corporate services. So there are a whole lot of activities that will be undertaken. For the sake of this plan, we just decided to include the strategy plan. The next indicator, which is indicator 24, will be percentage of vacancy rate on funded posts maintained. And we think this ordinarily should not come up here, but we think for strategic reasons, we should bring the committee where we are and what are we intending to do in terms of maintaining a 10% vacancy rate or less. We have already advertised positions. We're in the process of filling them. So we want to maintain a 10% vacancy rate or less. So you see there are quarterly targets in that regard, Chairperson. The next indicator, Chair, is the approved ICT strategy and plan, and the Chairperson has spoken to that our reliance on the ICT of justice is problematic in as far as our work is concerned. So we want to start work in that regard, and we've already recruited a CIO. We're waiting for the appointment of the CIO to assist us in the development and the implementation of the ICT strategy for the regulator. The last sub-program, Chairperson, is finance. And even with finance, Chairperson, ordinarily we do not really bring up the targets to this level. But we would want to spend our budget, Chair. You see that our budget has increased by 90% or so. And that's a big ask, Chairperson. So we want to ensure that the issues of finance expenditure and procurement it's in the strategic plan, and we monitor and follow it. And so to that effect, Chair, what we've done, we've started with aligning the procurement to expenditure. So you'll see output indicator 26 and 27 are related in a way. 27 deals with annual target of 95% of procurement achieved. But that procurement, if you achieve 95%, Chairperson, it will drive your expenditure to 95% because you will then pay for that procurement. And on quarterly basis, Chairperson, we'll have 80% of procurement for that quarter. That is planned for that quarter achieved. And we hope that it will drive 80% of the budget. And it will go on up until the last quarter. And we hope that on average, we shall have spent 95% of our budget. And that's the reason why we put it in the APP so that Parliament is aware of it, so that the members of the regulator must be aware of what we are doing. Chair, I'm going to pause and ask the CFO to quickly take the committee through the budget and to deal with the last slide as well. Thank you, Chairperson. CFO.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I hope you can hear me.
We can hear you and we can see you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, good morning to the Chair and the members of the committee and the Chair and the members of the Information Regulator and to everyone present. I'm just going to brief you on the budget for 21 and 22. The regulator has been allocated an additional amount of 105 million rand over the medium term. So that is over the three-year framework for the filling of vacant positions in the organizational structure of the regulator. And the compensation of employee budget is specifically and exclusively appropriated for the regulator to manage his personal establishment within the allocated budget. Therefore, in the current and in the outer years, the major spending focus of the regulator will be on filling the human resource capacity of the regulator, as well as improving access to the services of the regulator by digitizing and automating processes. Next slide, please. In terms of then the MTF budget, in the first column we can see that the current budget for the budget for the prior financial year, which ended in March of 2021, was 45.497 million. After making representations to the Portfolio Committee and to National Treasury last year, we have had a significant increase in the budget allocation to 87.174 million, and that's a year-on-year growth of 92%. And baked in that is the 105 million over the next 3 years. So you can see that over the outer 2 years, there are above average, above inflation increases of 13% and of 8%. So if we look at the budget then in the second column for 21-22, the compensation of employee budget is 61.474 million. The goods and services budget is 20.5 million and the machinery and equipment budget is 5.1 million. That's in total a budget of 87.174 million. And then the increases will be aligned from in the MTF period. So that's the presentation of the budget over the MTF. The next slide, please. In terms of then the enablers to achieve targets, it's the implementation of the education and awareness programs on a nationwide basis aimed at informing and empowering people to protect their rights to privacy as it relates to the protection of personal information and their right to access information, the development and the implementation of the complaints management system, which will allow the public to lodge complaints and address the violations of their rights, to conduct research relating to proposed legislation or proposed policy of government that may affect personal information of data subjects. It's the legal strategy that will enable the regulator to carry out its mandate, the development of human capital systems, structures and businesses and business processes for efficient and effective organizational performance management, and finally, the financial resources to support the programs of the regulator in an effective and efficient manner. And I'll hand back to the CEO. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, CFO Chairperson. That will be it from our side. I'm not sure whether our Chairperson has closing remarks on the presentation. Back to you, Chairperson of the Regulator.
No, thank you very much, CEO and your team. I think in the interest of time, Honourable Chairperson of the Committee, we'll take questions at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will now note questions and comments from members. I have Honourable Horn, followed by Honourable Ngola, Honourable Newbold Dreschens, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. May I continue?
You may proceed, Honourable Horn.
Thank you, and good afternoon to the information regulator and the team, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, a few questions. In the 2020-21 financial year, were we informed that the information regulator planned to appoint 41 staff members, and now it envisaged that 54 staff members is to be appointed. Could we be apprised as to whether the appointment of the 41 staff members in the previous financial year materialized, and whether the 54 envisioned to be appointed is then in addition to those, and if not, what the total staff complement then is foreseen to be in this financial year? And then specifically in respect of the functions that for all intents and purposes will become live on the 1st of July, could we be informed as to what the recruitment plan is in order to ensure that those functions could be properly exercised and fulfilled with immediate effect when the 1st of July arises? And then, Chair, given the obvious need for some technical and very, specialized skills, has there been done an environmental scan already around the availability of that type of skills in the country? And what has been done to prevent the situation where we going forward will have a report back to say, but for us ultimately to deal effectively with the new provisions of POPIA and the PIA functions that we've taken over, we've actually run into a problem that the type of specialized skills has not been readily available. Then, Chair, also looking forward to the 1st of July, in April it was reported that an online portal for registration of information officers was expected to go live at the end of April. Could we be informed as to whether that platform has indeed gone live? If so, what has been the response? And if not, what's the reason why it's not gone live yet? And when is it expected to go live? And then still with the POPIA functions that will come into operation on the 1st of July, We all know that whether institutions or individuals act with intent or only negligently, there's some stiff penalties that is available to the information regulator going forward. But could we be afforded information as to, I want to say, the protocol that will be in place? Is it foreseen that the full might of the law will be used immediately, or will there be guidance and warnings from the first period after the 1st of July? And I'm specifically asking this, Chair, also on the basis of, I mean, it's foreseen that 24 public awareness sessions is to take place, and we know a lot has been done to sensitize businesses and big business specifically, but there is still, I want to say, a real possibility that specifically medium and smaller businesses might not yet be fully ready, despite quite possibly the good and the best efforts of the information regulator to ensure that everybody is kept on board regarding the need to have the PR plans, etc., in place come the 1st of July. And then lastly, Chair, I want to touch base with the information regulator in terms of the developments and looking forward to the local government elections later this year. So from our side, we've noted that the Department of Home Affairs has initiated changes to our electoral laws, which they informed Parliament that it's ultimately those changes were initiated on the, I want to say, the insistence of the information regulator. And it has all to do with the manner in which the voters' role going forward will be made available to political parties and, of course, also independent candidates who's contesting elections. And from my side, I would want to request the information regulator to possibly just maybe unpack the reasoning behind this drive a bit further, in the sense that there is obviously a need for, when you talk about campaigning and elections, a need for a very careful balance between the enabling political parties and independent candidates to campaign effectively. And when I talk about campaigning effectively, specifically being able to identify who are registered voters, because in South Africa, of course, you are only able to vote in an election if you have registered to vote. And I want to make the statement and get the information regulator's response to say that there's an argument to be made out that if you register to vote, you opt in, at least initially or in principle, for political parties and independent candidates to make contact with you. And then, of course, in terms of PR, you should be able to, and you have all of the rights to inform a party or all parties that going forward you don't want to be engaged in a direct manner by political parties. But for the health of our democracy and for free and fair elections to be able to take place, of course it's essential for political parties and independent candidates to be able to know who they should engage with. And I want to know from the information regulator whether they have considered that the manner in which they've now seemingly determined the IEC must redact identity numbers on voters' rolls, whether that could not result in a situation where the ability of political parties and independent candidates is curtailed up to the point where the question could be asked whether they are still able to, in a free and fair manner, engage with potential voters in the run-up to an election. So if the information regulators could inform us a bit more about the whole manner in which this was approached, and quite possibly international benchmarking, etc., and whether they have looked into the way other jurisdictions have been dealt with, have been dealing with issues like this. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you. The next speaker, Honorable Ngoda.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let's indeed welcome the presentation by the regulator. Chair, firstly, last week, the committee, through its chairperson, has issued out a statement voicing out its discontent and concerns over the budget cuts that hinder the execution of mandates of the entities that report to the committee. I think, Chair, it is worth welcoming when the regulator presents to us that they have got an increment of 90% plus. I think we must welcome that, Chair, particularly when they have directed the increment on of vacancies, which is the key factor in ensuring that the regulator actually executes its mandate with the necessary capacity internally. And the issue of improving access to the services of the regulator was the accessibility of the regulator is quite important to the people of South Africa. I wanted to make that comment and say we are going to monitor the utilization of that budget very closely so that we are able to help the regulator to get closer to what it seeks to achieve. Chair, there is an issue which was raised particularly by the Chair and the CEO of the independence of the regulator, which I think is a very critical matter that the committee must take note of. I would wish to propose, Chair, that maybe when time allows, our program allows as the committee, we need to have an engagement, particularly around the matter of the independence. But I hear in the report that there is a separation strategy that has been formulated and approved already. There is an issue with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. I would like to propose Kesla Lukuti. Maybe when time allows, we need to have an engagement around this with both the regulator and the Department of Justice. Lastly, Chair, is the issue I saw on Program 2. Program 2 is access to information. But I'm really finding difficulties to grasp the legal balance between the PAIA and POPIA in terms of the mandate of the regulator. I was trying to check that the other is the promotion of access to information. The other one is the protection of personal information. So I'm starting to get the balance. How do we balance the two as the regulator in terms of the mandate we are executing? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can you remove the slides? Honorable Nuvut Joshan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the information regulator. Good day to everyone. My question relates to the four members of the information regulator whose term is ending the 31st of December. Now, four out of five, and I'm quite concerned about these four because all four of them's contracts end at the same time, so there will be a loss of institutional memory. I'd like to know why this has occurred. What is the background to these four contracts concluding or ending at the same time? Then the indicators, for example, public awareness and education strategy, awareness programs and communication, production policy program, how will those be presented to the public? I'm actually more interested in how people with disabilities will be getting access to these information programs. Like for myself being deaf, how does the deaf community, how will the deaf community get information about the regulator? Then last week, I read somewhere where the regulator intervened on Facebook and WhatsApp, the exchange of information, and the I'm asking if the independent regulator can intervene if a person like myself's information is shared. So what was the update with regard to your engagement with Facebook and WhatsApp? Then just for myself to know, I pay I pay fees for a child who is in a private college, right? Now last year I understand that COVID happened, but last year we struggled to get the results. Okay. Now when I ask for the results, they say no. According to POPIA, they cannot give me the information, and I believe if I am the account payer, I need to receive the information, but they say no, it goes directly to the student, which I understand, but the point is they didn't give the information to the student. So sometimes the students don't want to fight with the institutions to get the results, but the parents can then ask the institution because they pay the account. But the POPIA Act wasn't implemented yet to prevent me as a parent to get the information. I just wanted your advice on that aspect, please. I'm obviously not the only parent who is complaining. There are others who are also complaining about this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nivo Trachan. But with respect to your first question, that should be directed at us as parliamentarians, because that is in terms of the legislation, the terms of office. I think we should be moving towards staggered appointments. I think it has happened now with the information regulator, especially the resignation of one of the information regulators. We appointed one. So I think going forward, there will be that staggered approach, but we should consciously do that. Even with respect to others, that we must introduce staggered appointments so that we don't have a situation where people resign or their term comes to an end at the same time. But it's something that we should be looking at generally, especially even those committees that are responsible for state-owned companies. Honorable Jella.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you to the regulator for their presentation. I just want to make a follow-up on the question raised by my colleague, Honorable Verm, on the issues of awareness. We see the target of 5% there, Chairperson. If maybe we can get more information as to what informed this 5%, whether is this a target sufficient? for what they are going to do, Chairperson. And then on program three, Chairperson, that is program three in actual fact. I would also want the comment of the team when it comes to implementing the very same program three, considering the restrictions that we have now for COVID rules and movement. Okay, let me just put it just COVID rules, Chairperson. In terms of the movement, yes. But lastly, Chairperson, if I can also be given more information on this target of information technology analysis that has been removed, as to is it are we going to get maybe other targets, another target in 2022 APP to monitor performance, because it has been removed to this one. If I check from their presentation, I think that is the last one, Chairperson, that I wanted to talk about. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Advocate Kakula and Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members, for the questions. Some of the questions will be they will be answered by the CEO and his team. The questions of Honourable Horn regarding recruitment, the CEO and his team will answer that. So I don't know, maybe what we should do, we should go question by question, and I'll indicate, Mr. Mfala, can you talk about the recruitment and the specialized skills as well? I think you can talk about that, and
maybe Advocate Chakula, maybe what we can do.
Yes.
We will give you 3 minutes so that you can caucus amongst yourselves. To be fair to you, we've been giving other organizations the same. And then we will have a comfort break for 3 minutes so that you can allocate questions amongst yourselves properly.
I think that will assist. Thank you very much, Chair. We come back what time? You'll come back what time? It's 12:04 now.
Yes, can we come back at 12:10 just to be...
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay, colleagues, let's do that. We have already said the question about recruitment will be answered by the CEO. Who are you going to give it to? CEO.
Chair, I'll request Ms. Chube to deal with it, Chair, on the issue of recruitment for the previous financial year, as well as for the new financial year, but also on the specialized skills, Chair. What is that you are doing?
Yeah, I think
how we prioritize the recruitment for functions that are going to come into effect in July.
Giving us time, can we start, Ms. Shube, with the first question? In the order that we have agreed, who will answer what? Let's just proceed without me having to call anyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson of the committee, and good morning, colleagues.
Ms. Shube, can't you
Chair?
Be on camera? You have to be on camera so that members can see you, if you can.
Okay.
Unless you have a technical problem, then we'll understand. Sorry, Chair.
Good morning, Chairperson. Can you see me now?
Yes, we can.
Yes. Regarding recruitment,
last year we have received funding to fill positions. We prioritized 19 positions, which we managed to fill by the end of the financial year. All the 19 positions were filled. However, in the same year, we had 3 positions that became vacant. We are at higher level. Those positions are now in the process of being filled. In the current financial year, 2021-2022, we prioritized to fill 43 positions with the funding that we have received. Those positions have already been advertised and we are in the process of filling them. Regarding scarce skills, we had difficulty, as this CEO has presented, that it is difficult to recruit positions, those that are scarce. We have engaged the services of recruitment agencies to assist us in this regard. But second to that, we also had hired applicants or prospective candidates that can assist us. So that process is currently unfolding. We should be able to report on progress when we come back to report to the portfolio committee regarding that. However, it has been a challenge, Chairperson, to get people in high scarce skills fields. Sometimes even if we use the services of the recruitment companies, they also struggle to get candidates in those fields. But we are progressing. We should be able to report when we come back. How far have we progressed in that regard?
What are those skills?
Exactly, Chair. That's what I wanted the advocate Colin Weapon to do, so that he gives you exactly areas where we have battles. Advocate Weapon.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And good morning to the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and the Chairperson of the Information Regulator and the Members. Exactly. We have we went on a recruitment drive for POPIA, the executive for the protection of personal information. The executive has resigned, and we are trying to fill that specific position as an example. And we've struggled immensely to get a person who meets that specific criteria, and it's quite a specialized skill because the person to a certain degree needs to have some understanding of information technology as well as law and certain other skills, and be quite agile and flexible. And we've also then engaged, after we failed through our normal recruitment processes, we went on a drive of headhunting, and we also failed. But safe to say that at that position remains vacant, but we're doing everything in our effort to try to correct or attract the correct skill in that regard. And that's just by way of an example, not to prolong the discussions, but just to be specific. And it's also our understanding that because POPIA is new, that specific skill might not be readily available. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think we need to also disclose, as Advocate Weapon has said, that you know, we had recruited someone as the executive for POPIA, and we have to be upfront that he resigned, and when we did the exit interview with him, he came from the courts. He was a magistrate, and he felt that he wanted to go back because the task was too complex for him. And our recruitment shows that as well. It's very difficult. We've gone 3 times. 2 times with the recruitment agency, nothing has come out of it. So internally, the 2 executives, the executive for PAIA and the executive for legal, together with the members, of course, we are all doing POPIA work, but it's proving to be quite difficult to get people who have experience. Even when we outsource work, if you want a lawyer, for instance, to do some work for us, and we take out a request for proposals, it's quite difficult. I mean, the case in point is the WhatsApp thing that we're going to talk about, to just get people who are skilled in that area. And I think the people who have the skill, who are in private practice, they are doing so well that they will never leave their practices to come to the regulator when the money is not attractive to the 1st of July is coming, and their practices will concentrate on this area of work. I think that compounds the problem as well. Thank you, Chairperson. I thought I should add.
That's true. Okay.
Mr. Lal, can you talk about the portal, please?
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon. Good afternoon to our Chair and members. I just also want to add something on the issue of technical skills. I think, Honourable Chair, you will note that it's not something that's peculiar to South Africa, but you will find throughout the world there are very scarce skills in the data information security and security analysis field, which is why more so you'll find even governments which have deployed privacy regulations are also outsourcing these type of requests, because it's impossible to afford that kind of skill that you require. So I think when it comes to specific security analysis skill, we would have to look at outsourcing that. But to give you some feedback on the online portal, we have been working very closely with the Department of Justice, and they developed the portal on our behalf, and we are grateful for that. However, I think they themselves have resources, constraints with resources and the number of staff that they have that are available to assist. So at the moment, we are relying on the infrastructure of the Department of Justice, and they have managed to They have developed the system for us, so the system has been developed, and we are awaiting for them to deploy remedies to some of the small fixes that have arose. And they have assured us that these are minor problems. So we're hoping in the course of this week that the portal will be live. Unfortunately, we don't have the resources to have gone out to the market on this, and we've had to rely on the resources of the Department of Justice. And we are hoping that we will also issue a media statement as soon as that portal is up and running. We've been testing it daily, and each time we test, there is another issue that arises. So I believe it is going to be resolved. We want to make sure that the integrity of the system before we allow the public to have access to it. Thank you so much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Professor's name.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think my question dealt with the issue of the fines. As we all know, we are currently in the grace period, and as of the 1st of July, the entire POPIA in its entirety will be of legal force. Therefore, as of the 1st of July, data subjects will be able to actually file their complaints in terms of the POPIA and actually get redress in terms of the complaints procedure. We've been taking a proactive stance for the last 3 years in terms of handling complaints. So once complaints are now coming in from the 1st of July, they will be adjudicated. And once they are adjudicated, if a responsible party is deemed to have contravened the POPIA in any way, then the necessary sanctions will have to kick in. And then obviously those will be on a case-by-case basis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think to Honorable Horn, we have been preaching in all the stakeholder engagements that we've been doing to say the grace period ends. People, we have been saying, in fact, for the past 2 years that POPIA is here to stay. People should put compliance processes in place. And that come the 1st of July, there shouldn't be any excuse. More so that, as Professor Snail has stated, that all the bodies were given a one-year grace period. So We will have to implement the law. There is a lot that is going on out there on violating the treaties of South Africa. So we'll have to implement the law. Thank you. I think the next question is I have to deal with that question regarding the amendments to the electoral law. The history behind this, Honorable Horn and Honorable Members, is that we're looking at policies, we're looking at laws, and that's what the law says we must do. It's part of our mandate to look at whether the laws, the policies, proposed legislation complies with the provisions of the protection of personal information. So we held a colloquium with the IEC, to which members were invited. In fact, the late Honorable Mofokeng attended the colloquium. We identified the sections in POPIA, which in the electoral legislation, the Electoral Act and the Electoral Commission Act, that violated the provisions of POPIA. We then, one of those provisions is a provision that says on payment of a fee, the voter's roll can be made available to any person. The voter's roll, as we know, contains a lot of personal information. Key among the personal information, I'm not even talking about the name, the address, it's also special personal information, identity number is a unique identifier. So the voter's roll contains unique identifiers. It also contains special personal information that in terms of POPIA has to be handled in a particular way. So we then identified those sections and we then left it to the IEC to bring those sections in line with POPIA. I think that they then repealed the section or proposed the repeal of the section that says on payment of the voter's roll, on payment of a fee, they can give the voter's roll to anyone. That section was repealed. And then there was a section of publishing the voter's roll and what should be published, what information should be published. Honorable members, you will know that if anyone gets hold of my ID number, they can do so many things with my ID number. That's when they then came up with a proposal that they should redact the ID numbers. My understanding is that that reduction will apply on the voter's roll that they are going to publish, because they have to publish. My understanding, and talking about a person who has worked in that environment, is that the certified voter's roll will have all the information. My understanding, and maybe this is subject to what you need to clarify with them, was that the voter's roll that will be given to political parties will contain all the information. I thought the reduction will only apply to the voter's roll that is going to be published. But if that's not the case, maybe this is something that has to be followed up with the IEC, because indeed, on our side, we are in execution of our mandate. We have to protect the privacy of the voters. Of course, in doing that, we have to balance, as the law says, between privacy and free flow of information and make sure that the IEC as a public body, they are able to execute their mandate. But the voters' roll that is going to be published, for it to have the full, all the details, especially the ID number, is a problem. Was this benchmarked against other jurisdictions? In fact, it was. I have to even say that as I was doing research at the time when we were invited by the relevant portfolio committee to present on this issue, I looked at how other jurisdictions deal with this, in countries, the voter's roll is not made available at all. I think I actually saw that the amendment that the IEC has put forward is almost verbatim from the Australian law. They took it almost verbatim from the Australian law. And that law also, the objective thereof is to balance between privacy and the right to campaign and the right to vote and all those rights, because all the time there has to be that balance. I hope. I don't think the opt-in, Honorable Horn, applies to this. The opt-in, I think, provision applies to direct marketing. Of course, when the voter registers, they consent to their personal information being collected. They consent that the personal information must be used for the purpose for which it was collected, and so on. But there are certain provisions that have to take into consideration the privacy of voters, such as publicizing all the information of the voters, which includes their ID numbers. Thank you very much, Chair. The question, Honorable Ngola, I think what he did was a comment, which we appreciate. The independence of the regulator, I think the CEO will deal with this question.
Thank you very much, Chair, and Chair of the committee. We have taken a two-pronged approach, Chairperson, to the separation strategy. The first one is an approach that is in our operational plan, where the director general to devolve certain functions of financial, human resource, and IT nature to the regulator, so that the regulator can operate as one of the regions of the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice has 9 regions, and they have devolved a number of functions. As and when they want to procure, they have been allowed to procure up to a certain amount. When they recruit, they are allowed to recruit up to a certain level and so on, even with the IT. So we have written to the department's DG to approve that we become one of their regions and they devolve functions to us, so that the operational work that we are supposed to do is allowed. At the moment, everything that we do has got to come to national office, even a cell phone claim, Chairperson. The second approach, Chair, is what I've alluded to in the APP under Program 5A, which is the approved separation strategy. What we have done there, Jefferson, the regulator has appointed a 2-member committee which will start the work on the policy proposal to address the policy gap that exists and that prevents the regulator from being listed, and also to allow it to do its work independently as the experts. So that policy proposal, so once developed, it will be consulted on internally within the regulator. And once it's ready, then the consultation will go outside the regulator, including to come to the committee to present it, to get direction. And lastly, it will have to be presented to the Department of Finance or to the Minister of Finance for a decision. And that's the approach we have taken on the separation strategy. Thank you, Chair.
Advocate Strom, balance between pay and popia.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. I'll deal with the issue raised by Honorable Nola on the balance between PAI and POPIA. As we are aware that from the 1st of June, the prior mandate 2021 will, from the South African Human Rights Commission, will come to the information regulator. So we'll be responsible for both PIA, which is the promotion of access to information, and POPIA, which is the Protection of Personal Information Act. In terms of the balance and the test, it's true, the how comes into play. The intention of the legislature was not to have these two rights trump each other. There must be that balance. Now, for an example, when somebody comes and lodge a PIA request with a regulator requesting, for an example, personal information of a public figure, then the person whose information is requested, that public figure, might in the same breath come and say, I'm raising POPIA, meaning I'm raising privacy as an issue. I think this is an opportune time for our court also, so that determination should be made. And the issue of public interest in this regard will also play a major role. So I think it's opportune because POPIA has never been tested in our law. We don't have jurisprudence. But once to strike that balance in the test, I think the courts will also play a role. And it will be very interesting to see how it's going to be to outplay itself. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Nemasis, you want to add anything?
No, Chair, nothing further to add, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Nomzamo.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to the portfolio committee and the members and my colleagues. With regards to the question on how we are going to ensure that our communication interventions or our public awareness approaches will reach far and wide the community of South Africa, particularly the disability sector. We have put in place strategies that is using a segmentation approach, which will ensure that we actually, in our communication initiatives, we will reach the community far and wide, whether being illiterate people in the community, demographically, different languages, et cetera, as well as the issue of the disability community. But what I can mention is that in order for us to ensure that our communication is impactful to certain segments, it's going to be important for us to actually work with organized structures such as the disability forums, disability forums, even the Deaf Society, so they can also assist us in crafting communication or developing products that will ensure that the community at large receives the information in terms of the programs of the regulator, but as well as the available services that we offer as the regulator. So the segmentation approach will assist us greatly, but over and above that, we seek to actually develop communication products that as well will be accessible, but also user-friendly to the community at large. So we are embarking currently on developing communication products which are in a form of multimedia, audiovisual, picture stories, simplifying the language of these two pieces of legislature through development of pamphlets or flyers, but also using, as I said, multimedia approach such as cartoonistic illustration, so that we really ensure that we reach the communities far and wide. So that is our strategy in terms of ensuring that we communicate effectively and efficiently to the public. And just generally simplifying the language of these two legislative pieces as well as the role of the regulator. I think I'll also cover the issue that was raised by Honorable Jele with regards to our public awareness targets. Our public awareness targets for this financial year is 24 activation or awareness programs throughout the country, covering all provinces. You remember that in our previous financial year, our target was 9, so it has increased significantly, so that we ensure that we are creating much needed awareness in terms of the work of the regulator and its mandate.
So we are going to be breaking it down in a quarterly targets, whereby in the first and the last quarters, we're going to be having 5 activations throughout the through selected provinces, and 7 in the second and the third quarter. But what I can assure you is that in the 24 activations, we will definitely use a basket approach so that we have more activations and we cover all provinces in the country. With regards to COVID restrictions and how we will manage the issue of engaging the public, we have taken an approach to use a non-captive public awareness approach, whereby we will not necessarily invite, use the platform consistently to invite people into halls or community halls or town halls. We are using a non-captive audience where we are engaging and doing activations at taxi ranks, at malls, doing roadside intersection bleeds, and also so that we're able to manage the issue of COVID restriction, and also we're able to follow all protocols. So the audience not being captive, we can engage with them one-on-one. It's in an open space, and we are distributing a communication product which people can take home and still engage on the products, where we outline our programs and what is POPIA and what is PAIA and how they can exercise those rights outlined in those legislative pieces. I think that's what I would cover for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Tilly, can you deal with the WhatsApp, Facebook debacle?
Yes, Chair. Good morning, everybody. The way that we've approached the issue with Facebook and WhatsApp more particularly has been to engage WhatsApp. We've provided them with a critique of their approach. They've responded and tried to indicate how it is that they do, in fact, comply with local legislation. We remain of the view that there are two different legal and regulatory environments in effect, one for Europe and one for people living outside Europe. And we certainly have taken the view that the South African Protection of Personal Information Act has a privacy regime which is similar to the European Union regime, and we've advised WhatsApp that we believe they should adopt the European Union policy in South Africa and other countries in the Global South who have similar regimes. We've been exchanging correspondence with WhatsApp in this regard. As you'll know, the WhatsApp have indicated that they will be updating their application on the 15th of May, and they're going to ask people to accept the update. And if you don't accept the update, you know, then I think they're going to be approached, and we'll continue to talk to a number of international organizations who are also dealing with this issue. And what we are trying to do is develop a strategy that is in common with them, including the Global Privacy Assembly. And that's one of the things that we think will perhaps have a better likelihood of success, is to build a group of organizations, including data protection agencies around the world, in order to engage with this issue, because obviously Facebook is a massive company, and we feel it's not going to be particularly successful if we try to engage them just, you know, one regulator at a time, that we're going to have to build a coalition in order to make our intervention effective. Thank you, Chair.
Professor, do you have anything to add? Professor Snail, can you hear me?
Yes, Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Do you have anything to add?
Yes, Chair. I think what is also very important to mention is not just the fact that, you know, we've written to them, but there's also that core section of Section 57, the one that deals with prior authorization, you know. The fact that they intend to process unique identifiers for purposes that they were not related for, and also the processing of special information as well. You know, and in our last correspondence, we haven't necessarily said we will take them to court, but we have said, should they not want to further engage with us, we would have to consider our further options. So we are yet to hear from.
Thank you very much. Yes, just to elaborate a little bit on what was mentioned by Ms. Chilly, we are members of associations of privacy regulators in the Commonwealth, globally, and on the African continent. And we have participated, we've encouraged the network of African data protection authorities to write to Facebook to raise these concerns. We had a meeting with Facebook where they were trying, with WhatsApp, where they were trying to justify their privacy policy, the revised one. The Global Privacy Assembly is an association of regulators, data protection regulators globally. We have engaged with them as well to say together we're stronger, as Ms. Chilly has said, so that we write to them, to Facebook as the assembly. And today we'll be engaging the Commonwealth data protection authorities as well, so that they should also come on board. Later today we'll be participating in that meeting. But we are of the strong view that our government should also come on board on this one, because we are fighting a giant. I saw in Australia when media companies, I think it was Twitter and Facebook. The Australian government passed a law that said if you carry, if these two social media companies carry news on their platform, they'll have to pay for it. And I think this is a fight that government should enter and Parliament should also enter. We had heard and we had read in the media that the Portfolio Committee on Communications intends to call WhatsApp or Facebook to come and account to them. We would encourage, whether it's this committee, whether it's communication or both, I think we need to take this giant on to say it can't be business as usual. They cannot willy-nilly abuse the personal information of users. So that's maybe a proposal that we are putting forward to say maybe this portfolio committee, together maybe with the communications, should find ways in which they can call Facebook to come and appear before the committee to explain themselves, as the UK Parliament did. And that's a concrete proposal, Chairperson, we're putting before this committee. Thank you. The next one is the question of the results that could not be given to the Honourable Member. I think it was the examination results, which they said they can only give it to the student and not the parent. Advocate Weapon, do you want to comment on that?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Chair. Chair, thank you, Honourable Nivo Drassen, for the question. I think the very important thing that we need to pay attention to, Chair, is the issue of a competent person in our act. A competent person is defined as anybody who has reached the age of 18 and above. So, Chair, the strict sense and also on the strict interpretation. And
you have disappeared.
Can therefore continue to receive information in his own right.
Advocate,
oh, sorry.
Can you start from the beginning?
Sorry, Chair, for the interruption. Yes, a competent person is defined as a person who's reached the age. In the sense, Chair, that provides for us for a legal framework. Chair, I'm also a parent myself, and unfortunately, if a person or a student is 18 years or above, he or her is a data subject in his or own right when we interpret and apply the law or POPIAS in the strict sense. But I think, Chair, there's opportunity between parents. I myself being a parent as well, to discuss and agree on how to move forward, because the parent is paying, but the student is receiving the results. And because the results in itself constitute personal information, we have dealt with this question at the University of Mpumalanga in 2017, the question arose. But I think, Chair, in the strict application, a data subject, Chair, if you are 18 or older, you then become a data subject and your results constitute personal information, and it should only be disseminated, Chair, to the data subject who the student. And Chair, we also know about funding and people who fund students, and it becomes the information of data subject, and it then be strictly applied as personal information in this regard. And Chair, I think I'll stop there. And then also allow for the chair of the information regulator to provide more input, if there's any, with regards to the issue of the student and the account. Thank you, Chair.
No, I have no input. Can we ask Ms. Lau to talk about the target on information technology analysis, which will be our last response, Chairperson?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. In response to the question relating to information technology analysis being omitted, it has not been omitted from the legal operational plan, and that is where it has been catered for. And the reason for this is the directorate has not been established as yet. So as the recruitment process unfolds, the information technology analysis directorate will be established, and key staff will be employed, barring challenges relating to acquiring critical skills. The output indicators for the fourth indicator, which have been provided for in the legal operational plan, include the conducting of research on technological trends and developments in electronic platforms and digital media, conducting of research and reports on potential threats and vulnerabilities and emerging cyber intelligence threats. This directorate will also generate reports for both technical and non-technical staff to aid in the development of policies. It will also maintain an information risk register and assist with internal and external audits relating to information security. We're hoping that once a directorate has been established, we will have the requisite skills to conduct risk and vulnerability assessments and also look at recommendations on defense planning, such as installing protective mechanisms such as firewalls and data encryption programs to protect personal information, and so that our awareness programs could also include how does the public protect their personal information programs on digital platforms. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Advocate Lakula, are we done?
Yes, Chair, we have responded to all the questions that were put to us.
No, thank you very much, Information Regulator. I think as much as we are excited about the budget that you have received, but it's quite clear that in the outer years, there is going to be a big shortfall between what you need and what will be given. A very big one, which is going to pose some challenges going forward. But however, we are also asking all our entities to be very innovative in how they use resources that they are given to them, because the reality of the situation is that our economy is highly constrained, and the fiscal is highly constrained, we will not be able to get the money for whatever we want the money for. And there's always a need to strike a balance between what we will be able to afford and what will be in that what we want to afford and what we can be able to afford. We do understand that this is a new and a very important institution to protect personal information of the citizens, and it is playing both an economic and a security role. So it is a very important institution. We think it's important that its budget should continue to grow as it is trying to find its feet. It's also important that, as Honorable Ngola has raised, that we will need to have further engagement between ourselves and yourselves and the department with regard to your independence, which we think is very important. You cannot, as an independent institution, continue to be an appendage of the department. We need a clear project plan from both ourselves and the department, which must be clarified to us as to how and when is this independence going to be achieved, because we want you to be as independent as soon as possible. It is very important that you must not only be independent, but you must also be seen to be independent. Also to discuss the issue of the separation strategy. So in our next meeting with yourselves and the department, we'll be focusing on three issues. Is the issue of your independence, is a separation strategy, and also the devolving of functions from the department to yourself, so that you can be able to function without hindrances. So we'll be focusing on those areas in our next engagement from recess. But the other issue that was raised, in fact, the question by Honorable Nevote was raising an anxiety on our part, on all of us, not only on her side, but on all of us, is that the institution is at a very critical stage. If this process can be mismanaged, a lot of things can be reversed by many years. So we need to carefully manage this end of term of the commission, and it would be good if all of you, or most of you, can avail yourselves for re-election or for reappointment. We are concerned that we might lose critical skills if this process is not properly managed. So we do ask that most of you, or all of you if possible, avail yourselves for when we start to advertise. We are going to be advertising soon, so that by the time December comes, we should have pushed these appointments to us, and then for appointment by the head of state. But we are going to be starting very soon to have the appointments. But we think that you have done extremely well as the commission. You have not only been a commission, but for many months and many years, you have also done administration. You had no backup, but you were able to do both administration and your functions given to you by the legislation, and you have done extremely well. Some of the challenges were beyond your control, but with what you had, you were able to execute your work diligently. And for that, we are very grateful. We hope that you will avail yourselves to continue and compete with other people who would have applied. But it would be important that you also avail yourselves to be considered for those appointments. But thank you very much for the hard work. We know that there is a lot that is ahead of us. There are these many meetings that we must have, including checking. I think the first point it will be to check with the Portfolio Committee on Communication and Digital Technologies in how far are they. And then we will take it from there. If we need to have a joint portfolio committee meetings, or if they are highly advanced in terms of the preparations, then they will have to proceed. But I think if they're highly advanced, but we would be part of that meeting. If they're not highly advanced, then we will discuss the possibility of a joint portfolio committee meeting when we meet with Facebook. But the first point of call, it will be to check as to how far are they, where is the process. But thank you very much for your hard work. And I think also to thank the National Treasury for making resources available for this first year. We're still going to carry on the fight to have more resources so that you can be able to meet your mandate as stipulated by the law to ensure that our people's personal information is protected. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members. We are grateful for the support that you have given us. It's been difficult. We all of us, including the staff, we work 24 hours. Now that we are preparing for the 1st of July, it's actually, we need more hours in a day. But we continue to rely on your support as we prepare for that big day of the 1st of July. Thank you to you, and thank you to the members as well.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, that will bring us to the end of the meeting. We will discuss the program for the term tomorrow. There are some few issues that we would want to fix in the program, but we'll be able to discuss the program tomorrow. Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Advocate Tlakula and your team. Thank you very much, members, and everybody who is on the virtual platform. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chairperson.